using free speech to free minds. You're listening to The David Knight Show.
As the clock strikes 13, it's Friday, the 7th of January, year of our Lord, 2022, day 666 of America held hostage. As one listener sent a message and said, are you going to do an exorcism today? Well, I've been trying to do that for the last 666 days. Today we're going to talk about what is happening in China, in Kazakhstan. And I think it folds into the narrative that is being pushed to us about January the 6th. It is what they're worried about. And they should be worried because they continue to push this disruption iteratively to us in every part of the world. They seek to have a civil war as well as a world war. So we're going to be talking about that as well as some other people's takes on January the 6th. So we'll have I gave you my take yesterday. Today we'll give you some of the other people's takes on what happened January the 6th. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Thousands of cops deployed to quell public anger during a lockdown, accompanied by widespread food shortages. Well, it's not just food shortages. It's prohibition in terms of being able to bring food in, to distribute it. The logistics are prohibited, as well as going to the store, presuming that they would have anything there. You know, we were told, well, we're only going to lock things down for the non-essential issues. That was just a test. That was part of the preparations. And as we look at what is happening, the place that I just described is the town China that I talked about earlier this week, how they were arriving in the dead of night and taking people off to concentration camps because, you know, COVID or Omicron now, the flu. It's a mild version of the flu. As a matter of fact, the death rates, case fatality rates, assuming that people have Omicron, which that is an assumption, by the way. It's always been an assumption. That as well as Delta, they don't have the genetic sequencing tests that they're applying to all these particular cases to be able to, in reality, distinguish if somebody has a respiratory illness, to distinguish between one strain of this and another. So that's just a projection. But even with that, they're now showing that this flu that has locked down the world for the last 2 years has a case fatality rate that is a third of what it had been. Nevertheless, they persist and they escalate. And so in China, what we've seen is a beta test for lockdown and surveillance from the very beginning. We've seen in Israel that they have offered themselves as lab rats as a beta test for the vaccine. And Australia and Austria are not far behind China. So you have 13 million people in this city left bargaining and bartering for essential food stuff. This is why I had my guest on yesterday who had been a missionary. He'd been in Silicon Valley, working in Silicon Valley. He became a Christian, became a missionary, went to Romania shortly after it had switched and out of the, supposedly getting out of the communist regime, and yet it still had a long, long way to go. But he was there as they were having hyperinflation, empty shelves, as he explained yesterday. It's an excellent interview if you haven't seen it. I split into two parts so that you could see the part about living under these conditions as well as what he learned and what they started doing in that area. He took those lessons and started using them here. As a matter of fact, one thing that he didn't get into, which helps explain a lot of what happened, he said he and his wife got very sick while they're in Romania. The reality is that he didn't go into detail with it on the air, but they got he got thyroid cancer. I'm not sure about his wife. Had to have his thyroid removed because of contaminated food from Russia. You know, he talked about how going into the store, it was completely empty except for an aisle or two that were completely packed with one product, this kind of bluish-gray peas from Russia. And so I guess they were shipping off their radiation-contaminated food to Romania. But anyway, because he got sick with that, he became very careful about what he was eating, and also because he had seen the shortages in Romania. So what we're seeing now in China, it says people's food supplies are now running low because they have locked everybody down. They're unable to access medical care. Wait a minute. Didn't we lock down so that we wouldn't affect medical care? You know, we didn't want to overwhelm the hospitals, but now we fire the nurses and the doctors if they don't give the jab, because that's the only thing that matters. This was never about health care. This was never about protecting the hospitals. The first responders, the heroes, the hospitals are all being thrown under the bus because this is about the vaccine. And the vaccine is a bioweapon. And it is also a MacGuffin. You know, the Alfred Hitchcock plot device. You know, the Maltese Falcon, what everybody is chasing. The thing that motivates the characters. That's what the the vaccine is. It's a MacGuffin. And so these people are now unable to access medical care. Others have started trading locally in residential compounds to try to eat. Everything is being bartered in Xi'an, said a resident. People are swapping stuff with others in the same building because they no longer have enough food to eat. One person put out in a video clip, said people were trading cigarettes and iPhones for bags of rice. He said, we now have a barter system in our residential compound. We had a bag of rice and neighbors wanted to trade, a smartphone, and a tablet. We have 6 bags of rice in our home, but no vegetables. To contain any civil unrest, civil authorities have deployed about 29,000 police officers to enforce the lockdown, while countless local security guards are preventing people from entering or leaving areas that were designated to be high or medium risk. One video clip that made the rounds on social media showed security guards beating a teenager in the lobby of a building because he went out to buy steamed buns. He says, I was hungry, so I went out to get some Manteau. He was heard telling the guards. Then they started beating him, knocked him to the ground, knocked his food to the ground, and continued to beat him. And it went out on social media. Residents were initially told that they would be allowed to send a designated person to buy groceries every other day, but now that has been taken away from them. How were they supposed to survive? Well, they're not. And their response is to just bring in more police, who will act as the private army of madmen to beat people who try to get out and eat. And so these people are starting to barter the food that they have there, but how long is that going to last? Those who make it out to buy supplies are finding that prices have skyrocketed, especially of fresh fruit and vegetables, despite a well-publicized effort by the government and volunteers to bring in fresh produce into the city in large quantities to hand out to beleaguered residents. The vendor who is selling vegetables must be making a fortune, said one man. He said he's paid about 40 yuan for 10 peppers. Now, that's about $6.27. He paid that same amount for 6 tomatoes, and he also paid that same amount, $6.27, for 2 cabbages. State media, tightly controlled by the ruling Communist Party, they're so different from us, right? I mean, we don't have media that is tightly controlled by our government, do we? reported on a line of trucks hauling a selection of vegetables. They said it's fresh fruit, pork belly, into residential households. So they put that out on social media and said, all this stuff is just not true. Look, we have a convoy of trucks that's bringing in fresh fruit and pork and other things like that. But the address it was given, unfortunately, on the news report, people looked it up and they found out it was a residential compound for employees of the Provincial People's Congress and the municipal government. So as they starve people, they do a PR campaign showing convoys of food being brought into a residential compound. Their residential compound. This is the epitome of corruption, isn't it? So they said, where can regular people find stuff like that? We can't. According to the provincial government, as they were munching, you know, speaking between eating their rich food, a total of 41,000 police officers have been dispatched to Xi'an to maintain public order. 29,000 of those deployed work in residential compounds. 4,000 are operating traffic roadblocks so nobody can get in or out. A scholar who was there said the government's top priority in times of crisis has been to maintain public order and social stability rather than looking at the needs of ordinary people. Boy, sure, I'm glad we don't have a government like that in America or Canada or Australia or Austria or the UK or anywhere else in the world that you see, because we are all turning into China. That's what I said. YouTube didn't like that. Banned that video that was entitled, 2020, the year the world became China. Yeah, we don't do that. We don't put the government's security ahead of our freedom, ahead of even being able to eat or get medical care, right? National security. National security is not your security. Do you understand that? People look at this and say, oh, national security. We should all want national security, shouldn't we? Well, you pray for the peace of the country that you live in, but understand national security is a Dr. Strangelove term, like continuity of government. It's not about protecting you. It's about protecting them and letting the rest of us die. They've been building up the stability maintenance system ever since 2004, said this scholar. They say there's only 40,000 police officers here, but actually there are many, many more who aren't police, including neighborhood committees and security in charge of buildings. So, you know, they work in that capacity, even though they don't have the official title. So they used this total lockdown method on Wuhan last year, yet the rates of fatality and severe disease are both very low. He said, this is a commentator, Hong Daping. I don't know how much longer he's going to be allowed on air saying something like this. He says, I don't think this Xi'an lockdown is about disease prevention. It's more about controlling the population. That is a dangerous truth. Dangerous truth there and a dangerous truth here. When you look at what is happening in Kazakhstan, there's a leader who's been there ever since the Soviet Union fell and they got their independence. Back in 1990, he came in. He was 51 years old. He is now 81, and he's officially not the leader anymore, but everybody believes that he is still running the country. Now, when he got into office, he told the Washington Post that the nation could become a proving ground for democracy and a market economy. But now, after 30 years of this guy and what they've had now is an economic shock that has gone through their country. Not as straight ahead as what is happening in China. But when you look at what is happening there, fuel prices have doubled. And that was essentially the trigger of what was happening. Now, it's not clear who is ultimately behind this. Is this an organic grassroots revolt against rising fuel crisis? Is this something that was engineered by Soros organizations who are on the ground and have been pushing pretty hard? Is this something that the Russians want so they can have an excuse to come in? All these things are possibilities we can't tell at this point. But the people who are protesting, this guy who's now 81, Nazarbayev, formally stepped down 3 years ago. But the demonstrators were out there saying, old man, go away. And they weren't talking about Soros, I guess. He has stayed around. They see him as the ruler. Now, what is happening there? It has had worldwide effects. You may not have heard of Kazakhstan, but in terms of geographical size, it's larger than Europe. And they have become the number one producer of uranium, for example. They have massive stores of coal. And yet, everything in the country seems to be organized around liquid petroleum gas. And that is causing problems for heating as well as for transportation. And that's what these people are writing about. Now, these other issues, especially I've got the figures here about what percentage it is of uranium, but it is somewhere in the 40-some-odd percent of the world's supply of uranium. So that's going to possibly have an effect on the rest of the world. And the thing that has affected the rest of the world immediately was the fact that as they took down their internet, it also they are the number two Bitcoin mining country. They have about 15% of the Bitcoin mining that's going on, second only to the U.S., which is only slightly ahead of that, at 18%. So that's good. There's not too much of a concentration of Bitcoin, and that caused Bitcoin to go quite a bit lower because people could not process the transactions. But as one person said, this is probably a good thing because these types of disruptions, like we saw last year in China when they went in, just flat out prohibited it, physically shut down the Bitcoin miners in China. And at the time, it was the number one. I don't know if it was the highest in terms of overall in the country, but it was very, very large. But they did have the single biggest Bitcoin miner was there in China. I remember the interviews with him where he was talking about, you know, we had this big business and just one day they come in, basically shut it down by force. So that's going to be another opportunity for the Bitcoin community to learn and to become more resilient, I think, in the optimistic way of looking at this. The protests, which erupted last weekend, centered on the oil-rich Western region. So they got a lot of oil, they got a lot of coal, they got a lot of uranium. But this is about liquid petroleum gas. They've now spread across multiple towns and cities, including several oil-producing hubs. Even before the energy crisis this week, large political assemblies were only permitted by filing a legal request from authorities. Well, we would never do that in the U.S., right? Yeah, you have to file a request. And this is something that's been around back at the time in the 90s when this guy, after they'd had the Soviet Union fall, and this guy is talking about, oh, we got democracy and all the rest of this stuff coming in. Right about that time, I was involved with the Libertarian Party in North Carolina. We had a gubernatorial candidate. Very conservative, rational guy. We got him on the ballot. We wanted to get him in the debates because he would have really been good in the debates. And I was his campaign manager. And so they excluded us from the debates because, you know, the debates are a private affair and you're not invited. This is not censorship, of course. Oh, we love democracy. We love open discussion, but you're not invited. It would just be too confusing if we had three people in a debate, can you imagine? And so we got a permit and we showed up and we were protesting outside the debate site. And then there were some counter-protesters who came to protest us. And they had not gotten their permit. And it was a really sweet irony that these Marxists who hate liberty got carted away by the police because they hadn't complied with the statist requirements to have a permit to protest us, because we were protesting censorship and the violation of liberty. So they went to counter-protest us, and they got a good dose of the kind of world that they wanted to live in. They were really outraged and surprised. I don't know if they ever became, if they changed their political philosophy. I don't think so. This sort of thing, people don't seem to learn. Even before the energy crisis this week, they had a prohibition on these kinds of assemblies. So it was very unusual, because this is a pretty authoritarian area, that people would come out in the streets anyway. And it's gotten very violent. At least 18 police officers and military servicemen have now been killed in clashes. They are not even talking about how many civilians have been killed by them. They are talking about the fact that some of these police officers have been beheaded. There's a lot of different Muslim factions in Kazakhstan. Some of them, you know, the most violent, like the Wahhabists who love to chop heads. Citing the state-run outlet The Insider, our live blog said a decapitated body of a police officer has been discovered. This is also reported by the Associated Propaganda, AP here, and the press in France. The government outlet, and these are all government outlets, but the government outlet in Kazakhstan said that at least 30 protesters had been killed in clashes. They don't want to get that number too far out of balance. That would make people even more upset. So people can't get to the banks. The internet's gone down. So the ATMs are out of service. Bitcoin is, you can't do anything on the internet. And so Bitcoin is being affected because the miners can't work. But the people there can't get their money out. And the price of liquefied petroleum gas, LPG, doubled over a year ago. And that's one of the things that became a big issue. The people in Kazakhstan are extremely poor. The average household might make the equivalent of $250 a month, where minimum wage equals just over $65 per month if you were to work a minimum wage job. So when they have something that is fundamental to both heating as well as to transportation, somehow they're using this in transportation, the that is one of the things that could trigger this in an organic grassroots fashion. But again, there's so many different political aspects involved here. And because they have so many resources, it is 43% of the world's uranium supply. And massive stores of coal and oil. So therefore, we will move them to gas, which they don't have a lot of, and they're dependent on other people. This is the way this operates. They create trading zones and they create interdependency between nations. This has been a part of the globalist plan. This is not simply about market efficiencies, because if you go back and you look at the Trilateral Commission and Zbigniew Brzezinski, Mika's dad, he came up with the idea that we would consolidate into a global governance, first by consolidating people into economic trading groups. And you've seen that in the EU. First, they create an agreement that we're going to, for the people inside this geographical area, we'll have lower taxes and tariffs and that type of thing. Everybody's like, good, lower taxes. We like that. And then as it goes on, that creates a tighter and tighter economic coupling. People start specializing in different areas. So now there's an interdependence. You don't have different regions that are essentially autonomous and self-sufficient anymore. Then you start, the next step is you start to unify the currency and you unify the politics. And then you go for an escalated political unification. And the plan was to do that in Europe, do that in North America, to do that in Asia, and then to combine all those together again with trading agreements. See, the next, after you create, three major areas of the world and you integrate them very tightly, make them interdependent on each other, then you do the same thing globally by starting to do these trade organizations. So it always comes in through the economic aspect. Why? Because it's always the bankers who are there behind all of this. We're going to take a quick break, and we will be right back.
Listening to the David Knight Show.
I love the way the Babylon Bee puts this. There's so much truth in this satire headline. Listen to this. Businesses are now requiring a positive COVID test as proof of vaccination. A positive COVID test as proof of vaccination. That's right. I tested positive, so I must have been vaccinated. As they say, American businesses are now requiring employees to test positive for COVID before beginning their workday, since catching COVID is now the best way to prove that you've been vaccinated. Fauci has applauded the businesses for the new approach. Since this vaccine is so perfect, but ineffectual, this will enable people to take advantage of natural immunity, as if it was some sort of a booster. But I think sooner we all get sick, the better, because it'll really bump up that vaccine efficacy. But we still recommend masks, right? Yeah, still do. See, the mass vaccination rates, now this is not satire anymore, but it might as well be. Mass vaccination rates fail to halt COVID transmission rates, say studies. This is a study coming out of The Lancet, as well as data that we've seen out of Germany. So both out of the UK and out of Germany. In Germany, researchers found that the rate of cases among fully vaccinated individuals aged 60 and older has increased from 17% in July to nearly 60% in October, 58.9%. Offering a clear assessment that fully vaccinated people are increasingly becoming the source of COVID transmission, the study identified a similar situation in the UK. Throughout Britain, the number of household contacts exposed to unvaccinated cases was only slightly lower for vaccinated versus unvaccinated. Actually, the vaccinated were slightly higher. But here's the key. In the space of 3 weeks in Britain, 100 COVID cases were reported among individuals who are 60 or older. Out of those infections, 89.7% of people were fully vaccinated, while 3.4% were vaccinated. So the you've got 90% of these cases, the people were vaccinated, and only 3% were unvaccinated. Now, when the people try to explain why you're seeing so many more cases of vaccinated people being sick, they'll say, well, it's because we've got more people who are vaccinated. The majority of people have been vaccinated. And so you've got a higher population, and this is how this thing works. Well, no, because first of all, you're seeing that surges of cases in places where you have the highest vaccination rates. That's true if you compare nation to nation. It's true if you compare state to state within the United States. Or if you go to a place, for example, we talked about this a great deal about a month ago. I think it's one of the reasons why everybody was talking in November saying, what's going on with Africa? You know, this place is very poor. Usually you have a pandemic. You know, this is an epidemic that is everywhere, according to the WHO. So if you have an epidemic that is everywhere, places that are poor, that don't have much of an infrastructure, they usually get it much worse than everybody else, even if they don't get it first. And yet that hasn't happened. You know, we're here into this thing, and it was in November. You know, we're almost 2 years into this thing, and they don't have anybody that's vaccinated because they can't afford these vaccines from the pharmaceutical companies, and yet they're not getting sick. But where you have people that are vaccinated in a very high percentage, you have a very high percentage, and it's directly correlated. The more people are vaccinated, the more they're sick. And then you have a situation like this, where difference is 90-3. You don't have that kind of, that's way skewed out of the percentage of the population that is vaccinated versus unvaccinated. You might have 60-70% of the population. I don't know what the exact numbers are right now in the UK. That's typically what we're seeing. You might have 60-70% of the population and you've got that's vaccinated, maybe 30% that's unvaccinated. But we're talking about 90% of the cases being vaccinated and only 3% of the cases being unvaccinated. I guess I look at that and I wonder, what is going on with the other 7%? I mean, you're either in or out. Maybe they've only got like one shot or something, and they're not really sure what to call that. Nevertheless, 30 times, and there's not 30 times more people who've been vaccinated to explain that away. The CDC currently lists 4 out of the 5 areas across the U.S. with the highest percentage of vaccinated individuals as the highest transmission counties. You see? It's a direct correlation. So you might want to look at that and see what the cause is. No, we're not going to look at that. Look at the cause. Even though there's a correlation, we don't care. It appears to be grossly negligent, said one researcher, to ignore the vaccinated population as a possible and relevant source of transmission when deciding about public health control measures. Research released in The Lancet, which is the preeminent medical journal in the UK. With the Omicron dominant, they say. Oh, we know that. How do we know that? Well, because we've been told that. It's not because they're testing it, but, Omicron is dominant. COVID is now less than just the flu. The average vaccinated 75-year-old had about a 0.5% chance of dying from COVID if contracted, according to the New York Times. But the typical death rate from flu for the same age, according to the CDC, and data that was also reviewed by the New York Times, falls in the range of between 0.6% and 1.3%. So it's right there about the same as the flu, right? Essentially the same as the flu. So what do we have? We have in the UK, we have 30 times higher case fatality rate for the vaxxed than we do for the unvaxxed. And we also have a case fatality that we also find that one-third of the people who are testing positive, we should say, are testing positive after they get to the hospital, as they said in the UK. But we got 30 times higher problem for the vaccinated than for the unvaccinated. The best thing that they can do is say, but, you know, it's still dangerous. Well, yeah, I mean, people are still dying of the flu. And, you know, people died of the flu in 2020 when they told us nobody died of the flu. They swept all those cases into COVID-19. Just ridiculous. I mean, I just could not believe when I was working at InfoWars, one day I got finished and I sent the cuts for the videos and stuff. And I'm leaving. And as I'm leaving, Mike Adams is doing the show in the fourth hour. And he's got a chart up there from the CDC telling everybody that people aren't dying anymore from heart disease or from cancer or from flu. They're all dying from COVID-19. What's up with this guy? I don't understand it. Mr. Health Ranger. Anyway, the best they can do is say people are still dying. Well, you know, people are still dying of all kinds of things that we're not locking down the world for. And so it continues on. The march to totalitarianism continues. Look at Italy. Introducing the second COVID passport, further restricting the freedoms of the unvaccinated. Now, this was back in November. They were saying those who don't have the super green pass at that point in time would be excluded from indoor dining and from being able to go to cultural and sporting events. They said, we're making this a little bit more, you know, narrow. The original green pass would let people who were unvaccinated go if they'd had a test, and within 48 hours, they could still get that pass in there. And they pointed out at that time in November, they said last month, protests erupted throughout Italy as the first green pass went into effect, which would allow people to, they had to show proof of vaccination or take a test. And people didn't like that. So they let that wait for a month. And then they said, all right, we're still going to let you work if you take a test and you're unvaccinated. But now we're not going to let you go out to eat or go to cultural events or go to sporting events unless you've been vaccinated. We're not going to look at the test for that. And again, the people who are vaccinated can still spread this. They spread it at the same rate or greater rate than the people who are unvaccinated. So then this is the way this thing rolls out. You have a green pass to jab or test in order to work. A month later, you get the super green jab, which means no testing allowed if you want to dine or go out for entertainment. But they didn't change it at that point yet for the workforce. Now, today, 6 weeks later, they're saying it's a mandatory jab for everybody that is over 50. So they go through these different stages. You know, they start to, first they say, you got to have a jab or a test to do work. Now you're going to have only the jab to go for entertainment. Then the next step is now you have to have only a jab to go to work. And the next step is you mandate this for everybody in certain fields of work, as well as now certain age groups, 50 and older. And the interesting thing about this is you notice this is happening on about a monthly basis. Remember when Fauci said, how do we make everybody take a vaccine worldwide that's not tested? Well, you got to do it from the inside, and it's got to be disruptive, and it's got to be iterative. This is the iteration. What they do in each of these cases, just as they're doing now with the mandates for people who are over 50. They say, well, this is going to be a month from now. This is what's going to happen. And they give you a month to get accustomed to the idea. And then as they roll in that, they come out with the next step that's going to be put in place in a month. All right, so now you're going to have to do this. And now, in a month from now, you're going to have to do the next thing. Absolutely reprehensible. 59 million residents of Italy are over the age of 50, including 7% who remain unvaccinated. They're going to force them to get vaccinated. Now, what they're saying is, you'll have no job. But now a lot of these people are pensioners, so what do they do about that? I'm telling you, they're going to remove health care for these people. They may remove their pensions. They may starve them out. This is what's happening everywhere. I mean, we've seen that China, Australia, Austria, other places, it just keeps escalating, even though there's absolutely no medical reason for this, no scientific reason for this. The infection rates are the same or worse. These people who are getting sick are the same or worse. Vaccinated status does not make any difference whatsoever. The vaccines don't work. The vaccines don't stop anything. So the answer is to do it again and again and again. So as part of this, Mario Draghi, who is an insider banker, they call them technocrats. And I thought that was a kind of a strange name, except that this is about the technocracy. This is about, he was put in a few years ago, and they did the same thing in Greece. They overthrew the elected officials, and they put in bankers. They said, well, you know, your finances are out of order, so we're going to put in a banker to run you. But they're technocrats. And the technocracy is something that they've been talking about since the middle of the 20th century. They got it all planned. So they are now going to mandate vaccination for all university staff, regardless of age. Previously, they had mandated vaccines for all school staff, healthcare workers, police, and military in Italy. As I said, today's measures are intended to preserve the health system. What cynical liars they are. You know, they're forcing healthcare workers out if they're not vaccinated. They don't care about preserving the healthcare system. And they don't care about your they don't care about the system, and they don't care about the individual's health. Ministers from the right-wing Lega Party blasted the provision, characterizing it as without scientific foundation. Of course it is without scientific foundation. Again, you look at the any metric that you look at. This is the vaccination stuff is not making any difference except to make things worse. The Lega, which is a member of the ruling coalition. So this could be significant for him because he's got to have a group, you know, what they do in parliamentary elections. They have other countries other than the United States allow multi-parties. And so what happens is one that has the majority, even if it's not more than 50%, if it's more than 50%, they don't have to create a coalition. But if they have a majority and they have less than 50%, they have to get the cooperation of some other political parties. And so now, one of the ruling coalition is saying this is without scientific foundation. Despite the high vaccination rate, Italy has posted record COVID case numbers. See? Everywhere, it is directly related. The COVID case numbers are directly proportional to the vaccination. In other words, as it increases, as the vaccination rate increases, the COVID cases increase. As the vaccination rate goes down, the COVID cases go down. What would we assume from that? I have no idea, do you? We must be aware that even triple vaccinated are likely to transmit the disease, said the CEO of BioNTech, Pfizer's partner. Let me read that to you again. We've heard this from the CDC, we've heard it from the WHO, and now you're hearing it from the vaccine maker themselves, BioNTech. He said, it is obvious that we are far from 95% effectiveness that we got from the initial virus. No, you never had 95% effectiveness. You played with those numbers. That was a complete lie. And Pfizer was the biggest liar. You know, they were playing that game, that numbers game. When other people come out and say, yeah, we got the same effectiveness, they would come out a day or a week later and bump their numbers up by a couple of points. No, they invented the variant to cover their failure and their lies. Unvaccinated Australians are now being prohibited from leaving home to work, just as we started this segment talking about that same thing happening in China. Now they're doing it in Australia. And, of course, they've been doing some of this, But now you're not going to go outside to work or to exercise or even to travel. But it's only the unvaccinated. Only the unvaccinated, which is different than what is happening in China. They're just doing it indiscriminately to everybody there. But it's more focused, the tyranny is, in Austria and Australia as well. The government is effectively imprisoning anybody who does not get the jab. And, of course, where this is happening is in the Northern Territory, where you've seen Michael Gunner, the guy with the tyrant with a speech impediment. Now, this guy is nothing but a deranged Dr. Strangelove character. You know, well, stuff it. If you don't like the vaccine, I don't care if you're vaccinated multiple times. If you don't like my authoritarian proposals that I'm going to punish the unvaccinated, then you are an anti-vaxxer. And we're going to get you. Now, if you don't support his dictatorial orders, if you support choice in any way, shape, or form, he is out to get you. He said the fully vaccinated can continue as they were, but for people who are not vaccinated, lockdown rules will apply to everyone age 16 and above. Unlike previous lockdown rules, unvaccinated people will not be allowed to leave home to go to work or for exercise. How long before they start prohibiting people from going out to get food? Now, I just told you, the BioNTech executive said it doesn't make any difference. Triple vaccinated people are spreading it. Triple vaccinated people are getting sick. You have people in the UK getting sick. The vaccinated are getting sick at a rate 30 times the unvaccinated, according to the study. But they've got their internment camps set up, and they're going to continue down that path. The French president, by the way, as I mentioned this, the other day, Emmanuel Macron said that his intention was to piss off the unvaccinated, but he also called them non-citizens. Well, I have to say, you know, in case he doesn't realize it, the unvaccinated people are already pissed off. What he's trying to do is he's trying to push us to get violent, and you don't want to take that. You don't want to take that bait. But this is not about health. This is about, amongst all other things, you've got to get the shot of the beast. The shot of the beast. The person who, the outlet, that newspaper, which is called The Republic in France, they were the ones who carried that interview. And the guy who was the editor of The Republic was absolutely amazed that Macron would say this. He says, Macron told the newspaper, he said, I'm not about pissing off the French people. But he goes, but as for the non-vaccinated, I really do want to piss them off, and we'll continue to do this to the end. This is the strategy. Let them eat genetic codes, right? Putting pressure on the unvaccinated by limiting as much as possible their access to activities and social life. And so, there is a lot of pushback, even amongst the press, against this. After he said that, they said, after the first surprise suspension of this bill that he's trying to run through on the night of Monday through Tuesday, the examination of the bill, strengthen the tools for managing the health crisis, was again stopped after our interview with the president, said the outlet that had his interview. They said this is a direct consequence of the interview granted by the president of the Republic to our readers. They said the unvaccinated, you want to piss them off? He said a president cannot keep those remarks that were made. I cannot support a text which aims to piss off the French, said the newspaper publisher. The debates were finally able to resume in the assembly, but anger was still strong in the ranks of the opposition. The deputy, Damien Abad, immediately denounced the remarks as, listen to this, premeditated, childish cynicism. That's right. It's almost like this guy was some kind of an arrogant Frenchman or something. We'll be right back.
You're listening to The David Knight Show.
And it's not just an arrogant Frenchman. And France, always think of the Monty Python Holy Grail. I will taunt you endlessly, you English types. Well, I will taunt you, you unvaccinated people. You have another guy doing this, speaking French. This is Justin Trudeau giving an interview. In French, I'll translate. Yes, we will emerge from this pandemic through the vaccination. We know people are still making up their minds, and we will try to convince them. But there are also people who are vehemently opposed to vaccination. These are the extremists. Oh, yes, they don't believe in science. They're often misogynists, often racist, too. It's a sect. A small group that are taking up space. And here we have to make a choice as a leader, as a country. Do we tolerate these people or do we say, let's see. Because most of these people, 80% of Quebecers, did the right thing. And we want to get back to the things that we like to do. And we want to do that now. Do you see? That is amazing. So if you don't get the vaccine, you're racist, you're against women, and you are, it's not Justin Trudeau and the government that's keeping you from doing the things that you want. There you go. I taunt you. Next, he did everything but throw a cow, put a cow on a catapult and sheep and throw it at the unvaccinated. But he said, we're going to get through this through vaccination. That is the thing. That is the MacGuffin. Now, it is a weapon. It is harmful. But it is also part of the bigger goal. You know, it is useful to help them get there in a number of different ways. It provides them for a reason to put in the police surveillance state to control you that way, but it is also an instrument of population control in terms of death and sterilization. And so it is not strictly a MacGuffin, because a MacGuffin doesn't really matter in the plot, according to Hitchcock. But it is the key thing that they keep coming back to. And maybe if we can't get through to people, you know, I still think Alex Berenson had the best statement. He said, if somebody believes all this stuff, you know, you're not going to really get through to them by quoting them studies, because they've heard Fauci and other people say otherwise. So they're not going to trust your data. So just ask them to explain what's going on. If the vaccines work, what's happening now? And perhaps they could also understand that the vaccines are being used as a MacGuffin if they can't fully grasp the murder and depopulation agenda, sterilization, that is happening right now. Anyway, so he says, yeah, we're going to merge through this through vaccination. We know some people are trying to make up their minds. We're still trying to convince them. Let me help to convince you. If you don't agree with us, you're ignorant, you're anti-science, you're anti-woman, you're racist, and you are a small sect. Now, these people are a sect. They are a cult. And then he goes to this, says this amazing thing. These people are taking up space. Do you see the hatred? Targeting people, again, this is very much like Nazi Germany, right? Identify some group. Make them an enemy of the state so the state can come in and show you that they're going to protect you about all this. And he goes on to say, so we have to make a choice about these people who are ignorant, woman haters, female woman hater club, and racists. And this is a small group, and we can take them out, and they're just taking up our space, and they're keeping us from doing the things that we used to always do. It's not me as a leader. It's those filthy, diseased, unvaccinated, ignorant, racist, female woman-hating club, as Spanky would say. So we have to make a decision. What are we going to do? Are we going to let these people block us from doing the things that we like to do? It's amazing, amazing projection, isn't it? Justin Trudeau is not your enemy. Trump is not your enemy. Biden is not your enemy. President Xi, Emmanuel Macron, they're not your enemies. Michael Gunner is not your enemy. Your enemy are these filthy, unvaccinated people. We got to get them. They're the ones who are destroying our lives. And you see even more explicit criticism like this, of course, on CNN. This is a guy who pretends to be, Well, actually, he is, but he is a professor. But he pretends that he is a professor of bioethics, and he doesn't seem to profess any ethical statements or beliefs. His name is Arthur Kaplan. And in this CNN interview with John Berman, listen to the two of them. I mean, this is Nazi-level hatred and targeting.
Yeah, again, I get the idea of creating a moral standard here and really
call themselves
being
moral.
Willing to judge and say things out loud. The question is, and I also get protecting the vulnerable. Kids under 5 can't get vaccinated. People who are older and maybe have medical conditions, even if they are vaccinated, are vulnerable. And I get acting in ways that make their lives safer. But by and large, if you're vaccinated and boosted, even if you get infected, you're going to be fine. You're going to be fine here. It's the unvaccinated who are going to be hurt. So why should anyone who is boosted bother at this point to do anything that makes the unvaccinated more safe?
Why do you even care if you're safe with your vaccine works?
I want us to act as a community. I want us to act as a team. When you're fighting a war, you need all hands on deck. I don't want to reject those who still haven't done the right thing. I'll condemn them. I'll shame them. I'll blame them. But I don't want to exclude them. They've got to come around. We can't win this war. We're going to be talking about COVID
war
this time next year if we don't get more people to do the right thing. So we can't write them off. We can penalize them more. We can say, you're going to pay more on your hospital bill if you weren't vaccinated. You can't get life insurance or disability insurance at affordable rates if you aren't vaccinated. Those companies should not treat us as equals in terms of what the financial burdens are that that disease imposes. So I can think of a number of ways in which we should say, here's the stick, get on board. At the same time, we do need everyone. It's a war. You
war.
Gotta have all your troops unified if we're ever going to win it.
Yeah, it's still, by and large, it's the unvaccinated who aren't wearing masks. It's the unvaccinated who aren't social distancing. It's the unvaccinated going to crowded indoor events there. And so there's this bizarre irony here that the ones who are behaving are being told to behave 10 times more so. Professor Arthur Kaplan, always a pleasure to have you on. Thank you very much.
Yeah, it's the Jews, it's the gypsies, it's fill in the blank, right? So it's the capitalists, whatever. It's the white people, it's the unvaccinated. Yeah, he actually used, Arthur Kaplan, actually used the term war 3 times. It is a war, folks. Wars began with sanctions. When they locked down the middle class, said you're not essential, and started putting out all these businesses, putting them out of business. Oh, we got a relief coming. No, that relief went to Trump's friends and to the big businesses. Now, it was a war. Wars began with economic sanctions. And just in about a minute of talking, that clip was about 2 minutes long. And about half the time, you had John Berman there pouring out his hatred and targeting of anybody that doesn't do what the government demands. Yeah, they don't take the beast system, right? They are the enemy. We're at war with them. So about half the time you got Kaplan there talking, and in that minute, he uses the term war 3 times. Think about that. He says we're going to shame them, blame them, penalize them. And then, he didn't say it, but what is coming? Incarcerate, starve, and execute. That's the way this always goes. That's where this is headed. This is why you need to start looking at how you're going to operate outside of this system that they control. He says they're going to tell them that you're going to have to pay more on your hospital bill if we allow you to have health care even. You'll have to pay more for your health insurance. You have to pay more for your disability and for your life insurance. That was one of the things that I thought was the most interesting. You know, first I saw what that insurance executive, that CEO of One America, it's a $100 billion company, and it comes out, the raw data says we've seen a 40% increase in deaths. These are not deaths from COVID. And we saw these deaths happening in third and fourth quarter. It's like, boom, that's it. You see what's happening. This is a cumulative effect as these mRNA shots and then subsequent, you know, boosters and additional shots and everything, as that is starting to work its way through your system and do the damage as it's accumulating in the organs. And it starts in the third quarter. Has to have a little bit of time. We had a big surge of some people who died right away, but then other people, it's a cumulative effect. And you're seeing this, as he said, a 40% increase is more than 3 standard deviations away from the mean. In other words, this is an event that is a quarter of a percent likelihood that would happen. And that's what this guy does. He looks as an insurance executive. They look at everything in terms of risk, in terms of likely occurrences and so forth. But even with all of that, and that was amazing. That was bombshell. So that was 2 days ago. And then yesterday I talked about the fact that he played the clip for you. And he goes, so therefore, I'm making this assumption. So that was the hard data. And I'm telling you from the hard data, saying that this did not happen throughout all of 2020, and it didn't happen through the first quarters of 2021, that I believe that this is about the vaccine. That's my conclusion about the data. His conclusion was, well, the data is wrong. They should have put down that the cause of death was COVID. Now, he is reading his own bias into that data. And then he comes up with another thing that he wants to be true. Now I've got a basis for raising people's insurance rates, and the government will stand behind me. We'll raise insurance rates of the unvaccinated. Because even though it says these people died of causes that had nothing to do with COVID, I'm going to assume that they died of COVID anyway. And now I'm going to use that to raise your insurance rates. I mean, we've seen situations where the insurance companies, automobile insurance companies, even if you've got a perfectly good record, you haven't had any claims, any accidents, any tickets, nothing. If your credit rating goes bad, what do? They raise your rates. Why? Because they want to. Because they're looking for any pretense, even if it has nothing to do with it. They're looking for it as a pretense to raise your insurance rates. And that's what he was looking for. And so here's this guy who claims to be, the head of the Division of Medical Ethics at New York University's Grossman School of Medicine. And he calls himself a bioethics professor. Has he ever heard, in terms of medical ethics, has he ever heard the term first do no harm? Has he ever heard of that? Has he ever heard of something called the doctor-patient relationship? Has he ever heard of something called informed consent? Or this thing called the Nuremberg Code? This is an ethicist who is saying we got to shame, blame, punish these people for all this stuff. We're going to coerce them. He said the strategy should be to shift the moral high ground against those who cite autonomy and liberty. That's his terms. We got to take the moral high ground away from people who are standing on choice and liberty. We got to take that away from them. This guy is not an ethicist. As a matter of fact, this is not even anything new. I pointed out in July of last year, that was when the study came out, but they'd already been doing this from the very beginning. Yale University, and it was published on NIH, they had a multi-point a plan about how they were going to use these types of things. Praise people who do the right thing. Talk about people who don't take the vaccine. You're selfish. You are a danger to the community. As they would put it on the prisoner, you are unmutual, citizen, to the village. You're unmutual. Patrick McGoohan nailed it with that. It's like Guard Goldsmith and I love the prisoner. And it really nailed all of this stuff. Yeah, and so what did Trump do? Okay, they laid out all this stuff about how they were going to say, you would feel really guilty, wouldn't you, if you passed this on to somebody and they died. Well, you can pass this on to somebody even if you're vaccinated, right? But they've gotten it so ingrained in people's minds before these people admitted that there is no difference in transmission between the vaccinated and unvaccinated. It's already been settled in their minds. And they're not going to turn away from that. They're going to hold on to that. But they talked about all of this, and then President Trump's administration gave the Ad Council $250 million to run their ads. But most of this is to, you know, CNN has really crashed in the ratings. And it's not just the Ask Your Doctor commercials that are controlling CNN and Fox News and the rest of the mainstream media. It's also this massive amount of $250 million from the Ad Council. You want to promote Fauci as an influencer on YouTube? Well, you'll get money if you put Fauci out there and you ask him softball questions and you let him pontificate as if he were Mr. Science. You get a financial reward for that. If you oppose Fauci, you get kicked off of YouTube. But if you worship him and you hold him up as the epitome of science, You'll get money out of this $250 million fund. And don't tell me that it's just the pharmaceutical Ask Your Doctor commercials that are, you know, running cash towards CNN and Fox News. It is also pushing people to get this vaccine because it's always been about that. We'll be right back. The Common Man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project to make sure the commoners own nothing. And the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary. But each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. TheDavidKnightShow.com. I just want to remind everybody that we're going to have our first Saturday show on Rockfin tomorrow, and it is going to be a, it'll be behind a paywall. It'll be a question-answer type of thing. I don't know how many people will be there that will be taking live questions. I'll have some news, of course, to cover in case a lot of people don't show up. And I've also got some Ask Me Anything questions that people have sent. And what we're trying to do here is, you as an audience have been so amazingly generous to me, to my family, to encourage us to do this show after InfoWars and then to sustain us through this last year. We're trying to take some of that burden away from people. So that's why we inserted the ads on the audio podcast. Of course, you can still see the video podcast for free. The live broadcasts that are on DLive and Rockfin now, it started this week. We started with live broadcasts on Rockfin. Those are free. Aftermath FM, live, it's free. Of course, if you want to get to all the archive stuff that's there that Clyde Lewis has and all the other shows and archives of my shows, there is, you can join Aftermath. And he's got a bunch of documents there as well. On Rockfin, the Monday through Friday show will be there for free. We have to look and see what we do to make sure that that stays there. I think the shows can stay there. All right, now what's happened Tuesday through yesterday, the shows would be there live, but then after the live broadcast stopped, you wouldn't see the archive there. So we're going to talk to them about getting that done. But if you join Rockfin to see the Saturday show, if you join it through my channel, then that helps us financially. Of course, if you're already a member of Rockfin, you'll be able to see the premium content on Saturdays. And once you join Rockfin, you're not just joining to see my content. You can see any of the premium content there, as well as the free content. There's a lot of free content that's there on Rockfin. But if you want to see the premium content that is there, if you join one of the channels, then you get it for all of the channels. That's the way the system there works. So, you know, we've done these types of things, and we really don't know how it's, you know, how it's going to work. I don't really understand what's happening with the podcasts. We did it for about 6 weeks or so. And now, and it might just be the difference in the time of year. Nothing has happened to the number of downloads, but we're seeing the number of engagements plummet to about a quarter of what it was last month. So that's what they what the payment is based on. So I don't know if that's going to be a viable thing or not. We're setting this show up in kind of roughly 20-minute segments, putting in a short little bit of music to give me a break to take a sip of coffee, clear my throat or whatever. But it also gives me a way where I can break it, and then I can stick the commercial there so the commercial doesn't get stuck in automatically in the middle of what I'm saying. So we want to try to set something up where we have the people who have supported us on Subscribestar and other things that they could get the show without any commercials in case they don't want to go around it. But it's still kind of puzzling to me to see what is happening with the ads, because they just dropped off to nothing after the first of the year. Maybe that people just aren't advertising after December. I don't know. Let's get back to the news. We were talking about the irrational, relentless move to punish and to ostracize and to demonize anybody who has not taken the shot of the beast. And now we see other things being brought in. It's iterative. And just keep adding things, relentlessly adding things. Here's the newest one. Does it matter if dad is unvaccinated? Family courts have started to say yes. Flanked by their lawyers, the divorced parents hashed out an agreement outside the Pasadena courtroom and returned to inform the judge that they had agreed that their young son would get the vaccine. The judge, L.A. County Superior Court Judge Harvey Silberman, said, absolutely, he needs to be vaccinated. But then he turned to the parents and he said, are the two of you vaccinated? The mother said yes. The father said no. The judge said, sir, you better get vaccinated, or you could very well lose time with your child unless you have a medical reason not to. Do you see the logical flaw here? As the lawyer, attorney Lloyd Rosen, who represents the father, he said, here the court is not stepping in and making a decision for the child that the parents can't make because they're divorced. The court here is stepping in and making a decision for the parent regarding themselves. Now, this is the father's choice to get the vaccine or not. But then he's making that choice for him and making that choice, making that a condition of having parental rights. The judge wrote, the danger of voluntarily remaining unvaccinated during access with a child while COVID is around remains a threat to children's health and safety that cannot be understated. Hey, judge, this is not a risk at all. The kids don't have a risk. If you go back and look at it, I just pointed out yesterday, there was an epidemiologist in the UK. And he said when this first came out, you had a politician who was not an epidemiologist. You had a politician who said, well, the virus doesn't discriminate. And he says, oh, yes, it does. If you're elderly and have comorbidities, you're about 1,000 times more at risk than a child is. Children essentially had zero risk. That was one of the things that was so surprising. In past pandemics, if it's a real pandemic, child is just as likely to get smallpox as an elderly person. They may be able to fight it off better, right, because they're a little bit healthier. But if you go back and look at their much vaunted 1918 flu, if you look at it across demographic decades, you see that you had a big spike for the under one-year-olds, and you had a big spike for the 80 and above. And then the rest of the ages, broken down by decade, were approximately the same. Not the case with COVID. So, first of all, judge, this child doesn't have a real risk. Secondly, it makes absolutely no difference for him catching the virus, because the mother who is vaccinated is just as likely to transmit this as the father who is unvaccinated. If the father genuinely has a health reason for not getting vaccinated, I want to know what that medical evidence is, said Silberman, trying to practice medicine. He's a judge. He's not a doctor. And even if he were a doctor, he's not this father's doctor. He said, this child needs to be protected. He needs to be protected from ignorant tyrants like Judge Harvey Silberman in L.A. So on the other end of this, you have a Scottish fertility clinic now that is banning unvaccinated women, even as this VEX protein, the spike protein, is accumulating in reproductive organs. Even as that is happening, they're saying, well, if you've got infertility problems and you're unvaccinated, we're not going to give you any treatment. This is about stopping children everywhere. This is the Glasgow Royal Fertility Clinic. They said, quote, it has been nationally agreed. Nationally agreed. What does that mean? Nationally agreed that fertility treatment for unvaccinated women will be deferred with immediate effect. In other words, as of right now, we're not going to do it. That's what they mean, deferred. So in this article from the Daily Skeptic, they ask, whatever happened to liberal societies that don't coerce people into experimental medical treatments? Enter Donald Trump. And he is trying to grab some headlines, and he is successful in getting the hero treatment from Breitbart. He comes out and he says, government must be reined in. People must have the freedom to decide whether they want to be vaccinated. Well, as I said many times, this is a deception. It's a wonderful jab, isn't it, Donald? You keep telling everybody how it's a wonderful jab, and I keep telling everybody, just imagine what our world would be like if this guy hadn't funded it with helicopter cash, if he hadn't made 9 new billionaires in big pharmaceutical companies, if he hadn't threatened the bureaucracy to abandon all caution and say, if you don't give an emergency use authorization to this by tomorrow, you're fired. What if all of that hadn't happened? What if his jab had not gone out? This wonderful jab had never been there. He goes on to say, this is an outrage. And MAGA Nation, this is all in his imagination, isn't it? MAGA Nation should rise up and oppose this egregious federal government overreach. You should rise up and support the man who put us in debt with trillions of dollars, with helicopter cash for big pharmaceutical companies, for big bureaucrats, for government governors who are tyrants everywhere, and who financially incentivized medical malpractice. That's the guy you should be supporting, right? Donald Trump. Just phony, phony opposition. As one listener sent this to me, I talked about Dr. David Martin. I should try to get him on again. I talked to him at InfoWars when they were doing Plandemic 2. I interviewed both Dr. David Martin and the documentary filmmaker who'd done Plandemic 1 and also Plandemic 2. Plandemic 2 featured Dr. Martin, David Martin, and very interesting character. A lot of a different perspective as well. But he said, this was sent to me by a listener, and he said, here's an interview that he just had. And he said, here's my 3 takeaways from this. He said, University of North Carolina, having gain-of-function research dollar grants prior to the outbreak sanctioned by Fauci. Therefore, why are politicians like Rand Paul so untrustworthy as they never point out the unethical studies in the U.S., but they aid in further emboldening anti-China rhetoric? I played for you last day or two. I don't remember if it was yesterday or the day before. I said on the Monday after the Friday that Trump put this down. You know, he did that 666 days ago when he put down his executive order. I said there's a lot of people, and what I was talking about with the people at InfoWars, I said a lot of people are telling you that this is a bioweapon that's deliberately released. And I said, regardless of how dangerous this is, what this fear is doing is driving us into a lockdown and into copying the Chinese. That's going to make it more difficult if this is for real, if this is a real virus, a real pandemic, and if it's highly lethal. We are going to be crippled in terms of medical care by doing this lockdown. It's going to bust our supply chain for food, for everything else that we need to fight this. You don't, if you've got a war that you got to fight, you don't put everybody in handcuffs first, do you? It's all hands on deck. No, we start out by fighting this quote-unquote war, as you heard that phony bioethicist say. 3 times it's a war. What do? Well, you put handcuffs on everybody. But I said at the time, I said, regardless of what this is, why is it that we're now so focused? Because I had talked about it. I was the first one at InfoWars to talk about the fact that the only biosafety level 4 lab in China was right there, where they said, right there where the wet market was. I said, oh, it must have been bats or pangolins or some other nonsense like that. I said, No, the more likely suspect is the only biosafety level 4 lab that's right there. I also said that why is it that everybody is talking about locking us down? And I said that on March the 16th, 2020. Why are we talking about locking us down instead of talking about stopping this gain-of-function research everywhere? If you're going to panic everybody about it, and we should be panicked. I've been panicked about it since 2014 when I saw these accidents that were happening. And got even more panicked when I realized that Fauci and Francis Collins continued to do this research even when they were prohibited from doing it for a couple of years, 2014-15, under the Obama administration. But it was really more the Congress that did it, not Obama. And yet they continued to do this. And one of the places that they continued to do it was University of North Carolina. And that is one of my takeaways as well. I've said, why is Rand Paul making this simply about China, simply about Fauci? Because they want to use it for partisan advantage. Rand Paul never said anything about any of this stuff as long as Trump was there. He waited for a couple of months, and then he came after Fauci. He didn't want to criticize this stuff while Trump was there. He didn't want to call for ending gain-of-function research while Trump was there. Anyway, Dr. David Martin also outlines the incestuous relationship and how Trump sold us out since all politics is owned by Big Pharma. Furthermore, Fauci, Collins, etc., all profited personally, as well as the patent offices, showing that they're totally corrupt and for sale. And that's one of the things that David Martin does. He does patent research. That's his field of specialty. And you can find a lot of bodies buried in the patent office with these people, these regulatory agencies that are participating in this. It's like a profit-sharing plan. This is the march to transhumanism. This is a third thing they had to say. This is a computer code. It's a total AI operation in terms of the vaccine. Well, it definitely is a march towards transhumanism, towards a Mark of the Beast system, or the Mark of the Beast system, as I've said many times before. If it looks like it, sounds like it, walks like it, talks like it, it probably is it. This was sent to me also by another listener, and I just wanted to clarify this. You know, I pass along the criticism of Brian at Vaccine Impact about this event that's coming up. And he was very concerned about Robert Malone and Peter McCullough and RFK Jr. He said, these people are calling you to Washington to protest this. But they're all saying the vaccine mandates are bad, but the vaccine is good. That's the same thing that Trump is saying. And I've said many times, DeSantis says that as well, that I don't agree with that. And I think that's a very dangerous narrative. We've had Senator Ron Johnson, who has had various events where he has featured people who have been injured, trying to get people to understand what's happening with that. And he says, we'll say the same thing. Well, I'm not anti-vax. I just don't like this vaccine. And so, you know, Robert Malone, Peter McCullough, RFK Jr., they go further than Trump. Trump cheers the vaccine, but he doesn't like the mandates. These guys don't like the mandates, and they tell you this particular vaccine is dangerous. I would not call them, as the listener did, COINTEL agents. I'm not ready to blame people for that. All of these guys, Malone, McCullough, RFK, they've all paid a big price, I believe. In their personal lives and their careers, they have been vilified throughout the mainstream press. They've been canceled and purged many other places. And so I think you know, we can fight that war about vaccines and that type of thing coming up. But let's stop the mandates. Let's stop this vaccine, even more importantly. It's more important to stop the vaccine. And when you got these three guys who are going further than any of the politicians, they're going further than even the politicians who are doing the most to stop the mandates. People like DeSantis has done more to stop the mandates than anybody else. Creative, not just doing lawsuits, but he's done a lot to stop the vaccine. Let's cheer that. Let's stand behind that. Don't trust anybody. I'm not telling you to trust these three guys either. And I did tell you, don't go to that event. I really do agree with Brian. I don't think an event in D.C. is going to be productive at all. They will lie about it. They will abuse it, and they will use it for their own purposes. When we come back, I'm going to tell you a little bit about a big rally that happened in the capital of New York and how Governor Hochul reacted to that as well. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
You're listening to The David Knight Show.
All right, I had some I had a listener who sent me information about the rally that was in New York. This happened, let's see, what date did this happen? It happened on the 5th, or I think it happened on the 5th, or else it happened over the weekend. The email that was sent out from the organization that did this was sent out on the 6th, and so it had already happened. Listener took some very, as a professional photographer, and took some very good pictures. And Travis, you can pull some of those up and show people what this rally looked like. This was done by the Autism Action Network. They said, thank you, New York. Governor Hochul shut down Albany because she is afraid of us. Well, she's kind of afraid, but I think it's also about trying to make people look like dangerous extremists. They said, we had more than 4,000 people in West Capitol Park yesterday exercising our First Amendment right of free speech to peacefully assemble and to seek redress of our grievances. We talked, we listened, we sang, we prayed, we yelled, we marched. It was cold, and the roads in many places were dangerous with ice. Okay, so Travis is telling me he can't show it, says it needs permissions with that link. I don't know. I was able to pull it up. Anyway, I wish you could see it because it was a massive, great pictures. sorry, we can't show this to you. But it was a massive rally. I think 4,000 people would be a very conservative estimate. And it was peaceful. The New York State Thruway was closed for several hours due to ice and to accidents, but the people came anyway. They were determined. They believe very strongly about this. Some of the buses headed to the demonstration had to turn around, but still, we had this large turnout. Despite our peaceful record, we still managed to terrify Governor Hochul. She was supposed to deliver her first State of the State address from the Assembly Chamber in the Capitol, with both houses and the legislature present, with the event open to the public. The evening before our rally, she issued an order that attendance for legislators was optional, and that they could watch the speech remotely if they wished. The number of people allowed into the Capitol would be severely limited, and all members of the public would need to show proof of vaccination. Up to that point, the Capitol and the Legislative Office Building had been open to all, as long as you wore a mask. According to the news site, Politico, there were exactly three members of the public witnessing her speech in person. Her fear of us drove her to shut down Albany. So what is she so afraid of? It said she's afraid of the truth. She's afraid of the people who understand her lies. She's afraid of seeing the people whose careers she ended gain a short-term political boost, and so she said, for herself. She is afraid of the people who she once hailed as heroes, who she is now destroying for her own benefit. She is afraid of confronting the results of her own decisions, but we aren't going away. She can't run and hide forever. Eventually, she'll have to deal with us. And so I do believe that she wants to try to censor this and get people turned away from it. But I got to say that, you know, and fortunately, this was very peaceful. And you see families were there. If I could show you the pictures, kids who were holding up homemade signs. It was a large grassroots peaceful rally. But that doesn't mean that these people will not try to make it into portray you as dangerous, extremists, as racist, and so forth. Because we've seen that not only with January the 6th, but we've seen this with PTA meetings. I think that whenever we talk about going to capitals and things, just as Whitmer was very concerned about that. So she had the FBI come in and manufacture a conspiracy. Pretend that a guy that had a severe case of autism was a mastermind that was going to kidnap, torture Whitmer. And after they ran that scam, the guy who was in charge of it for the FBI went to Washington just in time for January 6th, basically running the same scam. So we have to be very careful about what these, how these people are going to portray this. But that doesn't mean that we don't demonstrate in massive numbers. We just have to be very, very careful whenever there is a large group of people that they don't have some agent provocateurs there. As I said on the morning of January the 6th, I said I would not be there because it's Washington, D.C., and because you know there's going to be agent provocateurs there. Didn't know that there were people from Trump's deputy attorney general had sent out assassination squads to be ready to kill people. That's now come out. In Germany, in an anti-lockdown protest in Germany, they had people who peacefully showed up. They brought their children with them, as we saw there in Albany. And the police got violent. And the police started beating and pepper spraying people. And the police pepper sprayed a four-year-old boy. This was in Schweinfurt, Bavaria, on December the 26th. And so the police started beating and pepper spraying people. One of the people that got pepper sprayed was a child. A video showed the screaming child who was taken to the demonstration in a pram being treated by two officers after coming in contact with the spray. The police stated that within minutes of receiving eye wash treatment from the officers, this boy was, quote, completely symptom-free again. And it's completely rare for the police to pepper spray people, right? Nothing to be worried about. Following the shocking event, German police reportedly filed an official complaint against the boy's mother for having brought him to the protest, arguing that she put the child in danger. She should have known, right? Shouldn't she have known that this private army of madmen, these so-called police officers, these thugs, she should have known that they're crazy and uncontrollable and unrestricted in their violence. She should have known that. So it's her fault. It's her fault. See, this is what we have to be careful about. But I'm not encouraging anybody to not do any of this stuff. Just because they're going to lie about us, just because they're going to attack us, just because they're going to spray four-year-old boys in the face with pepper spray, doesn't mean we stand down. People have done a lot more to get the liberty that we have now. And we're going to have to stand up to this stuff. And whatever it takes. I'm just saying, be careful. Don't take the bait. And I would say perhaps it's better to do these demonstrations away from capitals, even state capitals, but absolutely I would not go to Washington, D.C. I advised against that before January the 6th last year. The NFL, meanwhile, is talking about possibly moving the Super Bowl from L.A. to Cowboys Stadium. They said this was initiated by the city of Arlington. They're around, you know, where the stadium is for the Cowboys in Texas. It could be some useful negotiation tactics for the NFL in case California decides that they are just can't control their urges to, you know, mandate this and that. If they decide at the last minute that they want to try to shut down the Super Bowl, yeah, this would be a little bit of an embarrassment for them if they then move the Super Bowl to Texas, wouldn't it? But they said, we plan on playing it as scheduled in L.A. on Sunday, February the 13th, but we have contacted several clubs to inquire about stadium availability in the event that we cannot play the Super Bowl as scheduled due to weather-related issues or unforeseen circumstances. They have never done that for weather issues, right? What kind of climate do they think is going to happen in California? Well, it might just be, stormy weather and lots of mandates on the horizon. Right now, L.A. County does not have COVID restrictions, which would preclude the Super Bowl from being played in a full stadium. However, they're keeping their options open. In the U.K., the teachers' union, even though the government is starting to back off a little bit of the mandates on kids, and they don't have as strict regulations for kids, students, as we do in the U.S. in many places, but the teachers' unions are telling their members to ignore government guidance and to get even tighter with the COVID lockdown rules. They said that the current government guidance states that children should only be off on school days if they tested positive or if they show symptoms. But the unions say that the pupils should isolate if one of their family members has tested positive, and they should only return to school after a negative PCR test. In other words, pay me not to teach. I would almost take them up on that. You know, that would be a good beginning. You know, it's like the Marx Brothers thing, you know. will you stop playing? Well, you have to pay me to stop playing. And you couldn't afford to pay me not to practice, you know. So or I think he says, how much would it cost to get you to practice? In other words, so you're better. He says, you couldn't afford it. You couldn't afford it. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
You're listening to The David Knight Show.
Let me begin as we're going to talk about these vaccine mandates. We'll talk a little bit about that. I want to go back to December the 12th of 2020. What is significant about that day? It was December the 11th that Trump had the signing in ceremony after he had threatened to fire the head of the FDA, who obediently complied and now has been rewarded with a position on the board of Moderna. Just like his other FDA head has now moved on to Pfizer. So it worked out really good for that guy. He made the right choice. You know, he didn't get fired. Instead, he got hired by Moderna eventually. So that happened. And then Trump held his ceremony where he talked about his big, beautiful, wonderful vaccines, the greatest miracle the world has ever seen. That was December the 11th. So on December the 12th, I did a report on my show there. And I also did an article that you can still read at Roundtable Report. Prediction. When and how vaccines will be mandated. This is from December the 12th, 2020. I said, how is this vaccine going to roll out? Well, I got some predictions. I believe when they'll mandate it will be the third quarter of next year. When did that happen? I think it was September the 7th this year. I said, it'll be the people who have to take it to keep their jobs. It'll be the heroes that they use as guinea pigs. I said, the first responders, the doctors, the nurses, the military, no matter what happens, you won't hear about any of the problems with the vaccines. If it gets really bad and some people complain enough, they'll dismiss it as an isolated case. What did we hear? Oh, yeah, they got these kids out there, they're dying of heart attacks, but it's rare. It's very rare. You know, we got almost 200 athletes that have dropped dead on the playing fields. But, you know, it's rare. It's just rare. Well, we've never seen anything like this before, right? But I said they're going to cover up any negative effects. The first people that'll be hit will be the first responders, the heroes, the people who are doctors and nurses who've been on the front line. They will be the guinea pigs. And I said, and then they'll pretend that this thing is completely safe. And by the third quarter, and it happened on September the 7th, so the third quarter of next year, I said on December the 12th, that's when that'll happen. Actually, it was on the December 11th. That was when he was signing that. I said, we already saw that when a lot of people immediately had problems on V-Day, they had already started vaccinating some people with that. Pfizer dismissed those since the vaccine was already tested. And the test group, they said, didn't have any more issues than the placebo group. But you know what they gave the placebo group? They gave them a meningitis vaccine. That's convenient. You know, I mean, meningitis vaccine, that gives people Bell's palsy sometimes and some of these other things that you saw as immediate symptoms. Of course, this is very different, but some of the immediate symptoms that people would have would also be expressed as part of meningitis. You would think that a placebo would be, I don't know, saline solution or something like that. No. That was also another hint of how they're rigging this stuff. And that was reported by Reuters, as I point out, that the placebo was a meningitis vaccine. So went on to say, no matter what happens, they'll spin and cover up to make it not look like a problem. Then by the second or third quarter, they'll say, well, I know you didn't trust us when we started rolling this out with just 2 months of testing, but now we've been doing this for 6 months or 8 months of testing now, and you aren't going anywhere unless you get the vaccine. That is my prediction that I made December 11th, 2020. I said, it's my prediction that that will happen in the third quarter of next year. And I have another prediction about how they will roll this out, how they will do the mandate. And I said this, I said, whether it is Biden or Trump, they'll mandate it through employers. There'll be some jurisdictions where eager Democrats will jump the gun and mandate it. And this eager Democrat was Biden who did it. But they'll do that to test the waters to see if they can get away with it. If people don't fight them on it, then they'll mandate it through law and through the schools or under color of law. Trump was fine with them doing that for measles, right? Ah, you got to take the shot. You're not going to have a medical exemption or religious exemption, even at a private religious school. You're going to have to get the shot, he said. So if he would allow them to mandate it for measles, I said, what do you think he's going to do for COVID? But I said, what will ultimately happen is that it'll mostly run through employers and corporations. They'll financially blackmail them. I pointed out that the New England Journal of Medicine had already said from the very beginning of all of this, back in the spring of 2020, they said they'll have to make sure that it's the corporations that are doing it because they don't want to have any due process challenges. So we will do it the same way we're rolling out censorship on social media, the same way they rolled out censorship in political debates 30, 40 years ago by running it through a private organization. And so I also said at the time, I said, Fauci is a mastermind. As Carrie Mullis said, he's not a doctor, a scientist, but he's a consummate politician. And guess who will have legal problems? Guess who will be sued? Of course, not the vaccine manufacturers, but any small businesses who don't mandate it for their employees. They'll be sued. They'll be fined. I said, they'll be the ones who get sued. That'll be the issue. Holding up a stimulus check or welfare bill. The Democrats are holding back on the immunity, which is why they're putting in Javier Becerra to run this, because they're going to use lawsuits and the threat of law and legal actions to try to push this through in different ways to fine people. I said, you know, Trump had a big pharmaceutical executive from Eli Lilly, Alexander or Alex Azar. And so I said, and now in the next stage where they're going to use lawfare against us, that's why Biden is bringing in Becerra to be his head of HHS. After 2 months of testing, they've decided that the advantages outweigh the risk, quote unquote. You don't get to decide that for yourself. It's going to be mandated for you through corporations, through fines, through the threats of lawsuits. If you're a small business owner who doesn't mandate vaccination, it'll be like an invitation for ambulance-chasing lawyers to take your business, because we'd already seen that in Idaho. The Republican governor there, Brad Little, you know, you're going to do what I say in terms of lockdown and masks and social distancing and stuff like that. And if you do all of these different things, and he did that before they had the vaccine as a MacGuffin, he said, you do all of these things and you comply with my orders, then we will protect you against lawsuits. If you don't do that, then anybody can sue you. And I'm telling you, that's the way that this would have rolled out under a Republican administration. But, you know, Biden is an authoritarian and he's going to do it via mandates. The U.S. military writes, let's see, this organization here is, well, it's by Jay Richards. I'm trying to find, I've had this here for a couple of days. But they're using the same lies about testing that they did in terms of, we've talked about this for quite some time, saying that, oh, there's a lot of different products that have been tested with this stuff. So they're challenging people's sincerely held religious beliefs. In this particular story, what I thought was interesting about this, even though I've talked about this issue before, was the fact that you have individuals who are now talking about the chaplains who are attacking them, the military chaplains who are now trying to run this fake narrative that, well, you know, you disagree with this because of abortion. Well, we use aborted fetal cell lines to test all these other over-the-counter things that you do all the time. Last September, an Air Force Academy graduate requested a religious exemption. As a Catholic, she objected to benefiting from vaccines developed or tested on cell lines that were derived from a procured abortion, because that's what we're talking about. This is not spare parts that they were going to throw away. This was an abortion for purpose. The reviewing chaplain denied her request. What's troubling is that he did it on theological grounds. If this case were unique, we might not worry much about it, but this is just one example of many. Not everybody agrees on the morality of taking these COVID vaccines. Even Catholic bishops do not agree on the matter. Some have called for ethical alternatives. Others have urged Catholics to get the vaccine, but others have opposed it. As they point out in this article, they said, abortion is wrong. Benefiting from an abortion is wrong. All currently authorized vaccines were developed with or tested on fetal cell lines harvested from an abortion. To receive one of these vaccines is to benefit from an abortion. But as I've pointed out many times, understand, folks, that when we look at the safety profile of this, how pathetic that is, that you may be aborting yourself or your child if you give them a shot. You're playing Russian roulette. But anyway, they went on to say that she was challenged by this person, you know, saying, well, Tylenol and so forth. And then they explain, well, you know, Tylenol was developed in 1955. Bayer aspirin has been around, you know, for the basis of that has been around for a very long time, but they patented it probably about 100 years before they had these fetal cell lines to test it. So it's a fake narrative. But they're no longer looking for a few good men in the Marines. Actually, they're purging the few good men that they've got left who are ethical. And that is really the essence of what is happening. The CDC has backed previous advice to cut the isolations from 10 to 5 days, as I mentioned earlier. They're just arbitrarily changing these arrangements one after the other. Fauci, using as a somebody who is very skilled as a politician and a propagandist, he understands that you win the argument by seizing the high ground of terminology. And so that is not going, they're not going to talk about fully vaccinated anymore. Instead, the terminology is now going to be keeping your vaccinations up to date. So it's not going to be, are you fully vaccinated? It'll be, are you up to date? Why? Because it's going to be a monthly subscription, basically, which is what Babylon Bee said in satire. They said, yeah, they're going to offer a Pfizer Plus. You know, you pay them X amount of dollars per month, and you get your monthly vaccine. So Fauci cynically says, we're using the terminology now, keeping your vaccinations up to date rather than fully vaccinated. Yeah. Right now, optimal protection is with a third shot of mRNA or a second shot of J&J. So they're going to be using that new euphemism because that's what this, that'll allow them to continue to add these forever. You know, we may wind up when they talk about it being a COVID-19 vaccine, that may ultimately be that you get 19 shots. How far away is that going to be? Walensky is now still saying, oh, no, we don't have any plans to change the definition of fully vaccinated. We're not talking about, she says, the agency won't change the definition of fully vaccinated to include a COVID booster shot yet. But we will change the definition. We'll just call it fully up to date. Are you fully up to date? We're continuing to follow the science, and the science is literally evolving daily. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Biden orders parents not to allow kids near the unvaccinated. And I guess that also includes the unvaccinated parents. That judge in L.A. got the message. You can't let kids around somebody who is not vaccinated fully. I'll have to get rid of your visitation rights. Only 14.7% of kids 5 to 11 are vaccinated. So parents are supposed to keep their kids away from the other 85% of 5 to 11-year-olds. Asked Kyle Martinson. Nevertheless, Biden says there's no excuse for refusing COVID shots. See, I don't need an excuse, pal. you need to have the authority to order me around. I'm not going to offer you an excuse. It's unbelievable. Biden is trying to disguise a general vaccine mandate as a workplace safety measure, says Reason Magazine's Jacob Sullum. Well, as I've said, he doesn't have the authority for either of these things. You know, we understand that's what's happening. We understand that this running it through the corporations by putting pressure on them from OSHA, we understand that's a dodge. We understand that's nonsense. We understand it's not a workplace safety measure. It's just a mandate. But he doesn't have the authority to even do that as a workplace safety measure. I don't know why Reason is pretending that he's got that. So today the Supreme Court is going to be having a special session to look at some of these vaccine mandate challenges. And, of course, they are everywhere. He hasn't really had any victories, as I pointed out. He's lost on the issue of freedom of religion. He's lost on the free exercise of religion. He's lost on even the definition games that they've been playing between Cormenati and the other stuff, but it, you know, they didn't get an injunction on it. But they have had some of these four different blackmail tactics have had injunctions with them. And so we will see what happens with that. I think that will have weight with the Supreme Court, the number of losses that they've had and how strongly worded and how comprehensive those decisions are. Specifically in the OSHA mandate, I think the key thing for me, and it was mentioned by the judge that decided against them, said, if this is an emergency, why did you wait for 2 months to put out anything? And why did you extend the original 3-month date to 4 months out? But the American Medical Association is now in a friend of the court, or maybe we should call it the friend of the pharmacist brief, has now begging the Supreme Court to keep this OSHA mandate going. A lot of people are focused on, because it's a sports story, this tennis player denied entry into Australia. This is just another example of this. Do you remember, and I'll just put it this way, do you remember how people called out the Australian government that had put on a travel ban for anybody coming in? You might have family in Australia. You might have elderly relatives that you want to go back and see, but they wouldn't let you come in. And yet they moved everything around for stars who wanted to come in and shoot movies or do this or that. They go the head of the line. They go around the regulations. And, of course, they would do that, you would think, because of the Australian Open. But they have decided that they're going to punish this tennis star, Novak, and I think his name, I didn't look up to see how his name is pronounced. I'm guessing it's Djokovic. It's D-J-O Djokovic, I guess. So we got Djokovic to the left of us, tyrants to the right, and here I am stuck in the middle with you. We're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to talk about part two of January the 6th. I gave you my reactions to what happened, what I think about that, and so we're going to take a look at what other people had to say yesterday on the one-year anniversary. We'll be right back.
You're listening to The David Knight Show.
All right, let's take a look at January 6th and what people had to say yesterday. Jonathan Turley entered with a couple of comments, a couple of pieces about this. He said, are we going to destroy democracy in order to save it? Democrats are calling for the disqualification of dozens of Republican members in the wake of this. This is something that they're very intent on using. And, of course, the question for a lot of people is, did they initiate this to start with, have a part in it? Certainly they have escalated this beyond all reality. It was a Potemkin insurrection, if you will. That's what I would call it. But anyway, seeking to remove as many as 120 Republicans from the ballot in the name of democracy, says Jonathan Turley. That's what the Democrats are doing. So who is it that's running an insurrection here against democracy? He says it's like burning books in the name of literacy. He said, like villages in Vietnam, it appears that some of the members and activists believe that you have to destroy democracy to save it from itself. This year, the Biden administration joined many in the United States in criticizing the mass disqualification of 583 candidates. Where? Oh, in Iran, of course. Oh, we can criticize that when it happens in Iran. And then you have the Democrats in America want to get rid of 120 Republicans on the ballot for the same thing. That's the reality. So the Iranian elections, like elections in other countries like China, Venezuela, are democratic only in the most artificial sense. You can freely vote from a pre-selected list of candidates. This is why I didn't get all bent out of shape about the 2020 election. Several reasons. Number one, every election is rigged. It's rigged because the candidates are pre-selected. You get a choice between George H.W. Bush and H. Ross Perot. I'm sorry, not H. Ross Perot, but between George H.W. Bush and Clinton, and they keep Perot off to the side because both Clinton and Bush want NAFTA. And then in 2012, and that was the 92 election, in 2012, you have a choice between Obama and Romney because they're going to shove Obamacare down your throat because Romney had already done that with Ted Kennedy in Massachusetts, Romneycare. So they pre-select the candidates, and even though Ross Perot was able to nudge his way in, they succeeded in threatening him and pushing him out and making him look like a lunatic. And then after that, they made sure that they were going to run all these debates with a private organization so they could pre-select the people that were going to be there. So you only get to vote. So the corruption of an election begins with the ballot. Yeah, all the hoops that they put on there for everybody except for the Republicans and Democrats. They don't have to go through this. And they have written the laws so that they have permanent ballot access, and any independent or third-party candidates have to jump through all kinds of hoops. If you successfully do that, you will be denied access to the ballots, to the debates, I should say. And then you have all the other games that they play, from voting machines that are padded, and then it becomes even more corrupt as it becomes more electronic. I said after the 2016 election, I was already saying, because of electronic voting machines, which I do not trust at all, I said the next election, if we continue to go down, use electronic voting machines, the next election will be a hacking contest between the Republicans and Democrats. But it was even worse because of the lockdown. And Trump, who is, as everybody is saying, more people are dying this year, even with his vaccines. And we got Omicron and Delta, and they're even worse than the original thing. And yet, he's going around holding rallies. Everybody's going around holding rallies. You see Biden's having rallies where nobody's wearing a mask and so forth. So why did they pretend in the summer and the fall of 2020 that they couldn't have rallies and they couldn't do this and they couldn't do that? And they had to have a lockdown election where the ballots were mailed out to everybody. It was fraudulent from the beginning. And so, and then they added a whole new level of fraud. And if, as that Trump appointed judge, I read to that to you yesterday, an article that I wrote on December the 14th. I said if the judge, as the judge said, Trump knew about all of these issues before the election. He had an opportunity to do something about it before the election. And the judge said, so now he wants me to intervene because he would not intervene before the election? And that's what I was saying too. So I'm not sympathetic to that. I understand that our elections are a joke. I understand that they're corrupt. I understand they added whole new layers of corruption. And as Jonathan Turley points out, they're trying to use what happened on January the 6th to not only kick people off of the ballot, but if you look at the comments that were being made by Biden and by Pelosi and others, they're demanding that you need to completely federalize the elections now. They want to be able to do the gerrymandering from Washington. They want to be able to micromanage every aspect of these elections from Washington and centralize every bit of it. And as I pointed out, electoral disqualification systems are generally anathema, says Jonathan Turley, to democratic values. But some people in the U.S. are now toying with the idea for the 2022 or 2024 election. Let me tell you, the only way that the Democrats have a path to victory in 2022 is to change all the rules, just knock the game board over and rewrite everything. As Turley says, in the age of rage, nothing says democracy like preventing people from running for office. Oh, yeah, so democratic, isn't it? The saddest aspect, he says, of this politicization of the January 6th riot is that many of us wanted a full, transparent, and apolitical investigation. But, you know, it really was too late for that at that point in time. As I pointed out, on December the 14th, they had missed every opportunity to do anything. They were getting rejected in every court decision. And they weren't going to the Republican legislatures and places where there was a razor-thin edge and say, you know, we think that, and let me present my evidence here. They never showed up with the receipts. And they didn't show up in the right places with the receipts. It was too late. And the public was just gaslighted by all this QAnon stuff, the 4D chess, the Pachinik sting. All this was just to feed false hope to people that somehow it was going to work out all right. And, you know, we shouldn't give a pass to a lot of these so-called Christian prophets who are telling everybody, oh, I've got a message from God. You know, Trump is the anointed of the Lord and all this other kind of stuff. And he's a real president. He's going to be brought back in. I heard that so many times, I got truly nauseous hearing that. And you got these people. You could see videos of them. It was just like Alex with Steve Pachinik. These false prophets who claimed that they were Christians just continued with this nonsense well after January the 20th. For months, many of them were doing it. And they were saying, you know, well, this is happening, you know, but again, the real president is Trump, and God's going to pull all that stuff back. And I say that because even more so than these false political influencers like Alex, these false prophets, they need to be rejected because they're giving you false information about something that's far more important than an election. January the 6th was a protest that became a riot, writes Jonathan Turley. That's not meant to diminish the legitimate outrage over that day. It was reprehensible, but it was only a rebellion in the most rhetorical sense. More importantly, even if you adopt a dangerously broad definition of insurrection or rebellion, members of Congress who supported challenging the electoral votes, as Democrats have done in prior years, were exercising constitutionally protected speech. As Democrats pushed to federalize the elections and to negate the laws in a couple of dozen states, figures like Elias are now suggesting that Republicans could also be listed as rebels and completely barred from the ballot. Congress would then control not just how states conduct their elections, but even who can appear on such ballots. And let me tell you, one of the most dangerous things about this proposal from the Democrats that they put in January as the new Congress came in, one of the most important things about that is selecting the congressional districts. Gerrymandering has always been a thing, and I've told the story many times about what happened in North Carolina. Gerrymandering has been around since the beginning of America, you know, where the people in power in the state government get to pick where the jurisdictional lines are drawn. But it's become, with the aid of computers, it's become a real exact science. And so when you look at these jurisdictional boundaries of the congressional districts, they will go, you know, right down a particular road, and they might jump back and forth from one side of the road to the other because they know how the voters are registered. They know if you're registered to be a Democrat or registered to be a Republican, and so they will choose the voters so they get the desired outcome from that congressional district. And the game is that if you were the party in power, you want to make sure that you concentrate all of the, as many as you can, of the opposing party, you concentrate them into one or two districts. That's why you'll see somebody with a very safe Republican seat in a Democrat state, because they've concentrated all the Republican voters in that one district. And it doesn't matter how that thing looks. That's why in the early days they would draw these things. Somebody said it looks like a salamander, so they called it gerrymandering. But in North Carolina, the way it worked was you had the Democrats had drawn all the districts since the Civil War. They hadn't had a Republican majority. North Carolina went for Obama in 2008, and there was so much dissatisfaction, buyer's remorse after seeing Obama for 2 years, that everything went Republican in North Carolina in 2010, except for the congressional districts, because they were hard-coded with this redistricting. And that's the key. You had every election, every statewide election, and went Republican. And for the first time since the Civil War, you had a Republican majority in the state House and the state Senate. That's how broad the reaction was in that midterm election against Obama. And 2010 was a year in which they did the census. And so that's also a year in which the jurisdictional lines were redrawn. And the Republicans, in charge for the first time since Reconstruction, redrew the lines to their advantage. And the Democrats have been suing in court and claiming foul, you know, ever since. And yet that's what they had done for about 160 years. So that's the way this works. And that's what the Democrats now want to do from Washington. If they do that from Washington, they will permanently entrench the Democrats' majority in Congress. The party that would draw the lines will set who wins the majority of seats. It's just that simple. Because the next election, like I said, in 2010, everything but the congressional delegation went Republican. And then after they redrew the lines, beginning in 2012, it went Republican. And that's what the Democrats understand, and that's what they want to change. And I think that is the most dangerous thing. There's a lot of dangerous things in that bill, but that's perhaps the most, because that gives them the most control. It's all about them choosing the voters. They already choose the candidates, don't they? You know, the two major parties get to choose the candidates. Nobody else gets to participate on the ballot. And now, you know, you have whichever party gets to draw the lines, that party gets to choose, gets to have the majority, and always will. Because there won't be any way to change that. The people who are drawing the lines, whoever's in power, when that runs through, they will stay in power. A Reuters data scientist has been fired for exposing the BLM narrative. He said there is significant left-wing bias in the reporting at Reuters. Who knew? They're Democrat rooters is what they are. And the AP, the Associated Press, is Associated Propaganda. But yet, you know, we're told that Reuters and AP, they're objective news organizations. No, no, no. They're very biased. And as a matter of fact, anybody who tells you that journalism is objective is lying to you or unaware of their own biases. And the easiest way to understand that is to look at Matt Drudge. Matt Drudge doesn't write anything. Matt Drudge goes out and finds articles and features them. And by doing that, he conveys his personal opinion, or whoever it is that's running the Drudge Report now. But, you know, you could see radically how Drudge turned from a Republican stance to a left-wing establishment Democrat stance. And it's simply the news that he chooses to feature. He's not writing any of it. But what you simply choose to report on is going to show a bias. And I think anybody in their right mind understands that. Certainly the reporters do. So when they tell you that they're objective, they're simply lying to you. So this guy, Zach Kriegman, a former Reuters data scientist, was fired after performing a statistical analysis which refuted claims by Black Lives Matter. And now he's spoken out against the company's culture of diversity and inclusion, which unquestionably celebrated the BLM narrative. Yeah. I understand, you know, as part of the January 6th coverage yesterday, I gave you my statistical analysis of Stop the Steal. And I said, this is completely false. And so I didn't get the same treatment that he did. He was sent to Human Resources and Diversity and Inclusion for a chance to reform his thoughts. They knew that I wasn't going to be reformed. So they skipped that step. You go directly to being frogged, marched out the door. Kriegman came to believe that the company's blue bubble, quote unquote, had created a significant bias in their reporting. Reuters, we had an orange bubble at InfoWars. By the way, it's still there. You know, Alex is trying to pretend it's not. Reuters is not having the internal discussions about the facts and the research, and they're not letting that shape how they present the news to people. I think they've adopted a perspective, and they're unwilling to examine that perspective, even internally. And that shapes everything that they write. And so what did he say about BLM that got them so upset? Well, this is not even anything that's new data. It's pretty obvious to everybody, right? So you look at this, and as I said for the longest time, you have two different narratives that come out about the interaction between black people and police. And so one group will say that you have more black people being killed by the police than you do white people. But, you know, there's more white people that are killed by the police, but it's a higher percentage of black people that are being killed by the police. And so both sides will argue over that. And as he pointed out, when he does the statistical analysis, he says, although the percentage of black people being shot by the police is a higher percentage than white people being shot by the police, he said, it's not disproportionate to the level of violent crime that's being committed by the black population. You see that difference there? In other words, if this is a group that as a group statistically is committing more violent crime, then you would expect that there would be statistically more of them that are shot. But my approach to this from the very beginning was, I said, let's not let these Marxists divide us. Let's understand that there are innocent people that are shot by police officers and that there are bad police officers. And let's talk about how we come together instead of saying, you know, they're doing this to us, and you know, the Black Lives Matter, the Marxists are telling the black people, hate all white people because this is happening with the police, and defund the police and get rid of the police and so forth. Instead, what we need to do is we need to reform the police, and we need to have the black people and the white people come together and say, what can we do to make sure there's legitimate oversight? And when we have a bad person who is in the police, and you're going to have that as Frank Serpico said, you're always going to have, in any human institution, you're going to have bad people. Police are no different. How do we get rid of the bad people in an institution? If you don't work on trying to get rid of the bad, corrupt judges, or the evil, sadistic and violent cops, or the corrupt, bribery-taking politicians, if you don't do that, then that organization just continues to get worse and worse. And so we ought to all be coming together in terms of how do we do these types of reforms to these institutions that are always going to have bad people in them. And it was kind of interesting that the person who was, shot and killed by the police officer, the woman, she was Australian, and she had marched in previous situations where there was a case of excessive, looked like to be a case of excessive use of force. She had marched in that. And she called the police, and they had a rookie who seemed to be a minority hire, Muslim, who they'd brought in from Somalia, and they wanted to virtue signal about that. And he came in, and he's like a Barney Fife, and he was nervous, and he shot and killed her, the person who had called the police. She had heard something she thought were shots and called the police, and he's there, he's nervous, and a rookie, and he shot and killed her. I mean, the reality was is that they needed to be coming together to talk about training. You know, what is the basis of the training? What is the basis? How are we testing these people to make sure they got the right kind of psychological profile to be given this kind of difficult, dangerous job? And then what do we do to have oversight of this? Instead, they made it about race, simply about race, because what they want is division and chaos. The AP declares the mistreatment of January the 6th prisoners is a conspiracy theory. They said, while it is true that some of the suspects have complained about their time in jail, it is wrong to argue that they're being held as political prisoners, said the AP, Associated Propaganda. Authorities have said the suspects in custody are being given the same access to food and medical care as other inmates. Well, you know, the case that I talked about yesterday, part of the problem was that he was being given the same food that was causing him to lose 20 pounds in 2 weeks because he had a disease, and he needed to have specially prepared food like a kosher food or something like that. They would make that and have made that kind of accommodation to people who were Muslim. But no, they weren't going to make any accommodation to him. But there is a lot of evidence from people, and we've covered that. They just simply dismiss it out of hand without pushing back on it, of course. Biden, Harris, and comments that they made, put together by the New American, they characterize it as a toxic mix of hysteria, downright lies, ridiculous exaggerations from a dementia-addled President Biden. That's a pretty good way to describe this. He said they assaulted the will of the people, quote unquote. They held the American people at knife point, at the throat. And talking about how democracy was attacked, simply attacked. Well, if you want to see what an attack on democracy looks like, look at their bill to reform the elections. This wasn't a group of tourists, he said. This was an armed insurrection. But as New American points out, in fact, the FBI did not recover any firearms from the mostly peaceful protesters. Even the people who were arrested for being violent did not have any firearms confiscated. So this was not an armed insurrection, Biden. But we must be absolutely clear about what is true and what is a lie, he said. Yeah, let's be 5 years ago, as New American points out, Biden was not worried about the political violence. He was not worried about those who refused to accept the results of an election, the will of the people. On January the 20th, 2017, when the Democrats didn't like the fact that Trump had won, rioters rampaged through Washington, D.C., burning and pillaging as their candidate, Hillary Clinton, had lost. Nor were Biden and Harris worried when enraged protesters swarmed into the Hart Senate office building during the confirmation proceedings of U.S. Supreme Court Associate Justice Brett Kavanaugh. They didn't care when those protesters pounded on the doors of the Supreme Court building and disrupted his confirmation hearings and disrupted the vote on the Senate floor. So they did it after the 2017 election. They did it through the Kavanaugh hearing. They had people essentially doing the same thing. And no issue. So there's an article from Real Clear Investigations comparing January the 6th, the George Floyd riots, and the 2017 inauguration riots. Here's the highlights here. They said the summer 2020 riots resulted in more than 15 times the number of injured police officers, 23 times as many arrests, and the estimated damages in dollar terms were up to 1,300 times more costly than what happened at the Capitol riot. Authorities have pursued the largely Trump-supporting Capitol rioters with substantially more vigor than suspected wrongdoers in the earlier two cases, and prosecutors and judges alike have weighed Capitol riot defendants' political views in adjudicating their cases. So in other words, they didn't care about the, you know, if you got the wrong politics, they're coming at you much harder after the January the 6th riot than they did after the George Floyd or the 2017 riots. Dozens of accused Capitol rioters have been held in pretrial detention for months where they have been allegedly mistreated. And there's a great deal of evidence of that, by the way. I mean, we've seen some pictures of guys with their faces smashed and other things by their jailers. In the summer 2020 riots, the vast majority of charges were dismissed, as they were in the inauguration of 2017, the unrest there. But prosecutors have not dropped a single Capitol riot case, not a single one. So Biden and Kamala Harris use this to demand a takeover of the elections. That's the headline from Breitbart. That's what I was talking about earlier. Biden said, let's be clear, we must pass the voting rights bills that are now before the Senate. No, that is exactly, that will end. That'll be the nail in the coffin. Everything that they've been doing, there's not a single proposal in that would make the elections more honest open and fair. Not a single one. Everything that they do is designed to create division, chaos, confusion, and it is all based on corruption. And that is coming from both parties, quite frankly. I said that the 2020 election was going to be a hacking contest because of what happened during the 2016 election. For example, in Utah, the Republican Party brought in Smartmatic, which had a, it's changed hands a lot of different times. But Smartmatic began with some pals of Hugo Chavez in Venezuela. And they've been accused in other countries where they sold this throughout Central and South America, especially in Brazil and the Philippines and several Mexican provinces. They've had the same types of accusations that we have had in this last year. And they're not the only electronic voting machine company, but they were one of the first ones. And they were able to keep Hugo Chavez in office. And so when Utah decided that they were going to go the electronic voting machine route, that's who they decided they would go with. And they did that in the 2016 cycle. And so I said, as they go into this electronic voting, you know, we already had the situation here in Texas where the guy that was put in charge by Rick Perry, he had, before that, he'd had a very lucrative private practice. They took a big cut in pay to go work for the Rose Law Firm, or rather, he went to work for the Rose Law Firm where he had a very lucrative thing, and they took a cut in pay to come back here and to be the election official. And what he would do before every election would be to tell the different counties, do not keep a record of the electronic voting. And that is in violation of the Texas Constitution. So you've got a guy who's running the Texas election saying, don't keep a copy of this. And we found that all out because we had a local candidate who challenged all of that. And they said, oh, yeah, we destroyed those records. We were told to destroy those records. And that's the way this thing has been running out. So I said that the 2020 election was going to be a hacking contest. It turned out to be even worse. Ted Cruz is now using the rhetoric of the left, calling what happened on January 6th, calling the riot a violent terrorist attack. He said, we're approaching a solemn anniversary this week, and it is the anniversary of a violent terrorist attack on the Capitol. Why is he doing that? Well, again, he wants to run for president. He wants to curry favor with the left, and he wants to distance himself from Trump and other people. He thinks that it's just a political calculation on the part of Ted Cruz, which you see all the time from all these guys. Whatever happened to the prosecution of Donald Trump for incitement, says Jonathan Turley. Yeah. I mean, you know, if this was an armed insurrection, where are the guns? And if this is incitement and insurrection, where's the indictment? I mean, you can indict a ham sandwich, right? Because you don't have to have anybody arguing the other side. Why didn't they even indict him? It was a lot of rhetoric. He says, this is a one-year anniversary of the disgraceful rioting in the Capitol building. The scenes of that day are seared in the memory of many of us. I publicly condemned Trump's speech while it was being given. I called for a bipartisan vote of censure over his responsibility in the riots. However, I've long maintained that there was no evidence to support a criminal charge against Trump for incitement. And I agree with him. I think, and I said this, I said they gave people false hope. They fleeced them for cash. They did nothing to audit the election. They did nothing to protect the security of the election. And I said, you know that in Washington, D.C., the thing is going to be crawling with agent provocateurs, feds and otherwise. None of that was done. And so this, none of this is to excuse Trump, but it just shows how the other side is using this as corruption, to try to completely change all of our election laws, to demonize everybody because of their political opinions, and also to lay the foundation for the next wave of tyranny. He says, yet a year ago, various legal experts declared that Trump should be charged based on his speech and in his delay in calling for the protesters to leave the Capitol. They also considered to arrest him. So he says, so a year later, whatever happened to all of this? Whatever happened to it? We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back. I've also got headline news that I've not gotten into, so stay with us. We'll be right back.
listening to The David Knight Show.
All right. January the 6th, a legacy of troubling questions. The hardened steel behind, I mean, listen to this. Have you heard much about this aspect? Yeah, people have seen the pictures of Ashley Babbitt being shot and heard some of that. But they very carefully curated the many hours of video because the place is covered with cameras. You know, just like the Pentagon was covered with cameras and you never saw any of that stuff coming out in 9/11. The hardened steel baton made the most disturbing sound as it bounced off Victoria White's skull. It varied between a hollow click and a deeper snap, depending on where on her head the metal weapon had made contact. A man in the crowd yelled, "Please don't beat her." It was chaos on the West Terrace tunnel entrance the afternoon of January the 6th. Outside, thousands who had attended Trump's rally were on the terrace, while groups of rioters battled police near the tunnel. A woman cried, "I didn't even touch you. I need help. I need help," a man shouted. "Stand up, damn it," intoned a police officer in riot gear. "Get out," boomed another. Then a blood-curdling scream, followed by the ear-splitting sound of an emergency siren. After repeatedly striking White in the head, the officer in white, that you can see in the videos, holstered his baton. Then he made a fist with his bare left hand and punched White in the face. "Oh, no, no, please, please don't beat her," someone shouted, to no effect. After three full-force knuckle shots to her head, the officer in white paused. Then he went in for two more blows. He grabbed her by the hair, the back of her head, and pulled it hard. White looked dazed and confused. She wore a blank stare. Another officer reached in with his baton in an apparent attempt to prevent more blows. The officer in white grabbed his colleague's arm and shoved it back at him. This almost unbelievable violence meted out on the unarmed 5-foot four woman, 5 foot four woman, provides a stark contrast to the often preached narrative that January the 6th was strictly an insurrection carried out by mobs of Trump supporters wanting to overthrow the government. White was a victim of brutality. Her lawyer is preparing a civil suit. Hers is one of the hidden stories of January the 6th, exposed only after a federal judge ordered that 3 hours of surveillance video held by the Department of Justice be released to her attorney. The circumstances of the worst violence are hotly contested, but the results were real. Trump supporter Ashley Babbitt was shot and killed by the Capitol Police officer as she attempted to enter the speaker's lobby. White and others were beaten by the police in or near the West Terrace Tunnel, attorneys say. And don't send me any letters saying that that was a false flag attack. I'm not buying it. I'm sorry. It never ends, all this stuff. Yeah, nobody died. I mean, that's one of the things that Steve Pachinik tried to pull on me. It was actually the only second time that I talked to him. First time was I had to come in on a Sunday and talk about the hurricanes in Florida. Which I'm not interested in weather. I'm interested in the climate scam, but I'm not interested in weather. But anyway, I was told I had to do it, so I did it. The next time I talked to him was after the Vegas shooting, and I'd already talked for several days to a lot of different people who had been there. And he was supposed to come on for 2 segments. He missed the first segment. He came on late the second segment. And he just would not stop rambling nonstop about the whole thing was a fraud and nobody had died. And I cut him off and I said, "We're not ever interviewing that guy again." I mean, it's just, so this, all this stuff I had with a shooting that happened in Sutherland Springs. I talked to a guy who was a former pastor there. I'd talked to him many times. I have a hard time remembering his name. I've talked to him so many times. He's an amazing doppelganger for George Washington. You can take a look at the statue of George Washington that somebody made, a head portrait that was contemporary at the time. And he's got on his business card, is Mark Collins, I think, is his name. Yeah, just came to me. He's got it on his business card. He's got that and then his face, and it's split. So on one side, you see the George Washington statue. On this side, you see his face. He looks exactly like him. He's even the same height and everything. Big guy. Big guy. But he was a pastor there at Sutherland Springs in Texas, the place where they had that shooting. And like I said, I'd interviewed him many times. He would go around. He'd dress up like George Washington. He's actually been in some movies, George Washington, the documentary Revelation that was there. They filmed some scenes with him. He's also been in some others. I mean, just amazing to how much he looks like George Washington. But he's also a history buff. He loves liberty, and he would use his resemblance to George Washington to go around and talk to schools and to give them the real history, not the 1619 type of stuff, right? And so I talked to him about that and about his role in the movie and other things like that. And so he contacted me that morning, and they were talking about how there were this fake information about what had happened there that was being put out by CNN. And so he made it clear that the guy who stopped that shooting had an AR-15. They'd reported a different gun because they don't like AR-15s have got to be all bad, right? So you couldn't have an AR-15 that was used to stop a mass murder. And so I talked to him about that, and he was very, very upset about that because he knew all those people. He'd been a pastor there for years. He'd moved on. There was a different pastor there at the time. And then a few months later, he contacted me, and he was very upset and very hurt. He said, I heard you guys are saying that nobody died there. I said, no, we're not. There were people who were saying that I had said that nobody had died there, because when you start going down that path, everybody thinks, well, you're going to say that nobody died at every one of these shooting events. And so I'd already talked to him about that, and I had him back on, and we talked about that and set the record straight that I'd never said that, and we had him on from the very beginning, and we let him come back on and talk about the aftermath of how people in that community, the pastor had lost a daughter there as well, and how they were dealing with that. And then in the aftermath of that, Steve Pachinik calls up after the Vegas shooting and wants to pretend that nobody died. I said, you realize that when they tell you these people who are so hung up on this nobody died thing, that is a disinformation campaign by the left. Add false details to something to discredit people who are talking about what really happened. Anyway, getting back to January the 6th, in response to the violence at the Capitol, the FBI launched one of the most sweeping investigations in its history. Agents pored over cell phone video, social media posting, surveillance video, police body cam footage, but they can't seem to find all of the pictures of these people, like this woman, 5'4 woman, who was beaten repeatedly with a baton, punched in the face repeatedly by this guy. Yeah, they keep that stuff pretty tightly controlled. Now, there's a lot of discussion about Ray Epps, and I said from the very beginning, and I don't know anything about Ray Epps. This is mostly been research that's been put out by Revolver and the guy who runs it, Darren Beatty. So and certainly there's recordings that have shown up of him saying, we've got to go into the Capitol, got to do this, come tomorrow, and so forth, and then leading the charge into the Capitol. He was a person of interest initially by the FBI. Then they put him on a most wanted poster, and then they just scrubbed all that information from the FBI site. So that is very suspicious, and it should be investigated. But why are we surprised to know that the FBI would do agents provocateur in all this? I even said it that morning. Before it happened, I knew that was going to be happening. So you had yesterday, you had Matt Gaetz and Marjorie Taylor Greene talking primarily about this guy Ray Epps, and saying, what is going on with this? Why can't we get any information? Why was he taken off, and so forth? And they called it a Fed surrection. Again, talking about the fact that it was going to be, I said it was going to be agent provocateurs. If it wasn't that particular guy, there probably were others. Pelosi, meanwhile, has the Hamilton cast members come in and sing as part of their January the 6th remembrance. Because, we're going to bring in singers who have already made a career and of giving us a phony version of the founding fathers. We should call them the phony founders, and we could spell the founders with a PH, right? And then this picture. See if you can pull up this article, Travis. Never forget the cowardice our leaders showed on January the 6th from Information Liberation. The pictures that these guys took of themselves. Yeah, look at that. Look at the bubble boy. What in the world is he doing? I guess he figures it's going to be tear gas or something, so he's got this plastic bubble over his head. Or maybe it's just COVID, you know. You never can be careful enough about COVID. But listen to the article from Information Liberation, as he points out all these Republicans. It's not just Democrats, but it's also Republicans. He says, never forget we had Lindsey Graham calling for police to shoot to kill Capitol protesters. He told him, you got guns for a reason. You need to use them. One coward cop who did use his gun, Michael Byrd, executed unarmed 14-year Air Force veteran Ashley Babbitt, then later gave an interview praising himself for showing the utmost courage by killing an unarmed woman. You also have a Republican, Oklahoma Representative Mark Wayne Mullen, gave Ashley Babbitt's emotional murderer a hug and told him, sir, you did what you had to do, and they cried together. North Dakota Senator Kevin Cramer similarly said how grateful he was to the coward cop who executed her for not complying. New York Representative Occasional Cortex, who wasn't even in the Capitol on January the 6th, said she feared that she was going to be raped and painted a Capitol police officer who came to rescue her as an abuser. The Biden regime surrounded the White House with National Guard troops throughout the country and had them all bringing AR-15s, but they didn't actually trust them to be armed. Photographs and videos from throughout D.C. show the National Guard were not given any ammo for their firearms, rendering them inert. The claims Trump supporters killed police by bashing them to death with fire extinguishers on January 6th were all shown to be total lies. On the other hand, new evidence emerged suggesting police may have also killed Roseanne Boylan. For his part, Trump condemned his own supporters, called for them to be prosecuted to the fullest extent of the law, quote-unquote, just days after he had pardoned the king of Medicare fraud. That was what one of these guys was given that moniker. Along with a bunch of other Chabad Lubavitch convicted super criminals just 2 months after he had released traitor Jonathan Pollard over the terms of his parole so he could go to Israel. Hacks like Ben Shapiro called for them to all, quote, rot in prison. Senator Ted Cruz labeled them all terrorists. Nevertheless, despite the lies from the regime and our controlled media, a poll in September found that half the country views the January the 6th defendants as political prisoners. Information Liberation goes on to say, our occupiers are a group of pathetic criminals, low-life cretins, who couldn't hold a candle to the great men who founded our nation like George Washington and Andrew Jackson. While they wax poetic about how January the 6th was an assault on the sacred temple of democracy, you've heard that over and over again, that phrase, right? He says what most Americans view the Capitol as, a whorehouse. That's exactly what it is. As a matter of fact, it was P.J. O'Rourke years ago. He used to write for Rolling Stones, and he had a book. He called it A Parliament of Whores. Well, they're not a parliament. It's a they're a capital, but anyway, you get the idea. Trump had some very angry words for Sean Hannity over the texts because, you know, Sean Hannity was trying to talk some sense into him. You know, I guess he could have said, you know, Donald, you made enough money off of this Stop the Steal stuff. I mean, how much more money do you need? You made $250 million. Don't be greedy. You know, just be gracious, maybe. Trump hit out at Fox News' Sean Hannity on Wednesday for suggesting days after the Capitol riot that the former president should stop claiming the election was rigged. The letter quoted a text sent by Hannity to Mark Meadows and to Jim Jordan 4 days after the Capitol riot, said, Trump can't mention the election again, ever. I did not have a good call with him today, and worse, I am not sure what is left to do or to say. and I don't like not knowing if it's truly understood. Do you have any ideas? So he's trying as a independent newsman. How can we support Trump? Hey, Sean, what about the country? Did you ever say anything about that? Did you ever say, you know, he can't keep saying that this vaccine is a miracle. He can't keep pushing this on people. He can't keep shutting down the testing. He can't keep showering helicopter cash on all these different people. No, Sean never said anything about that. That's why I said I was fed up with Trump. I will never support him again. I'll do everything to oppose him. And I'll oppose the other people if I don't like them either. Again, it isn't an issue of, well, who do you want in the White House? If you ask that question, if you say that, you have fallen into this trap of thinking that this country can be fixed from Washington, that central planning and central control is the answer. And that's really what you'll say, oh, no, I want a free market economy, and we'll only get that with the Republicans. It's like, no, they will not give that to you. How long do you have to watch them to realize this? The only way you're going to get freedom is if you take it, and if you do it in your community from the grassroots up. From the grassroots up. I got this letter from a listener. Said, please shoot this lie. I have a request. Can you please address this lie that taking the Trump shots prevents you from having severe symptoms? This argument I hear from, and he works in EMS, all my patients, coworkers, friends, they believe that the shot protects you from having severe illness. Therefore, it's a good thing. They'll concede that it doesn't prevent transmission of anything. Well, that's a victory there, I guess, you know. You still got, that's still being sold. That's the basis of that judge attacking that father in the divorce case. You still hear this from CNN and all these other people. So, you know, if you got some people kindly who figured out that doesn't prevent transmission, doesn't keep you from catching anything, but then they still think that even though it doesn't keep you from catching, it'll make it less severe. Okay, so shoot this, he says. Well, I'll do my best. I'll just say this, you know, as I said before, that insurance executive who says, you know, we've seen the death rates go up. What did he say? He said, they're not labeled COVID, but I know they have to be COVID because that's the only thing that explains it. And it's got to be the unvaccinated because we know that the people who are vaccinated don't die. So he's got these preconceptions and he imposes them on the data, but the data doesn't support that. The data says they died from other things. And they didn't die during the 2020 pandemic. They didn't even die during the first two quarters of 2021. They started dying a little bit later. So what is going on? Well, you know, the reality is that it doesn't stop you from getting it, as they admit. But the reality is we've seen these numbers, even if we look at the people who died right away, 30,000 reported. And Harvard pointed out that as they did the study for HHS back in 2010, they said, well, only about 1% of the events are being reported into VAERS. And then just recently, you had Columbia University do another study. They said, well, it may be as many as 5%. Okay, so let's go with a more conservative. Instead of multiplying this out by 100 times, let's take the 30,000 that have been reported and multiply it by 20. That gives us 600,000 deaths from the vaccine. Now, they're telling us that we've gotten to about that, you know, with COVID after 2 years. But again, we were able to do that in about 9 months to a year with the vaccine. So dying at twice the rate, even taking the more conservative underreporting of these VAERS events. And of course, if you take a look at the people who have been injured, oh, well, you're looking at a million people. Multiply that by 20, right? People who have been injured. We don't know about the severity of it, but when you talk about, as they dismiss this and say, well, you know, you get myocarditis or pericarditis or whatever, but it's minor, right? And it goes away. No, it doesn't. You don't ever have heart damage go away. once these kids have a heart attack because of the vaccine. That will be with them the rest of their life. So I would point that out. And I had a doctor who contacted me and said, I'm not surprised at this 40% thing at all. And he gave me a link to a conference that was out of Germany. And the doctor was talking about the autopsies that they had done. And they had about 2 dozen autopsies that they went through. And he was talking, these are people who had died up to 6 months after being injected. And he was talking about the unusual types of damage to organs that they were seeing in these people. So you have some of these effects that happen immediately, some of them that are propagating out to a longer period of time. And to ignore that, and to go with the idea that, well, we think people are having milder symptoms and that they are getting better faster if they've been vaccinated, you know where that lie comes from? It comes from Anthony Fauci. He used that same kind of logic to push remdesivir. For a therapeutic, the standard is clear. Does it end the disease? And clearly, remdesivir did not do that, either with AIDS or Ebola or with COVID. And they had multiple studies that came out and showed that. And even Fauci's own study, not peer-reviewed, showed that it made absolutely no difference in the number of people who recovered. And then he told people, but they got better faster. Same thing he's saying about the vaccine now. They got better faster. And he said, and so now I'm going to declare it's the standard of care. Except that has never been the metric for the standard of care. And but that has always been the MO of that consummate liar, Anthony Fauci. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Listening to the David Knight Show.
Yeah, well, we're talking about toxic vaccines. Think about how hard it is to reach people. Even when you got a 36-year-old TV reporter having a heart attack and collapsing live on air, people can't believe that it's from the vaccine. He's 36 years old. And so he's talking and he just basically, falls straight over. But they dismiss it. You know, we're not going to pay any attention to that. A British study says post-vaccine heart damage gets worse with each jab. A British study reports that myocarditis in men under 40 years old after a China virus jab is worse than previously thought, writes the New American. The risk for serious complications increases after each inoculation. The risk of serious heart problems called myocarditis in men under 40 soars with each dose of the mRNA. And it is sharply higher than the risk of the coronavirus infection itself, wrote Alex Berenson in his summary. He said the findings call into sharp question the efforts by American colleges and universities to make their students receive booster shots before returning to school in January. The study, which British researchers released in late December, showed that the risk of myocarditis almost doubled after the first Pfizer shot in men under 40. Then it doubled again after the second. And it doubled again after the third, to almost eight times the baseline risk. You see that? That's why they keep doing boosters after boosters after boosters. Each time you get it, it doubles your risk of heart attack. But that isn't the only bad news from the study. The risk of the problems after the second dose of the Moderna vaccine is alarming. A second jab of Moderna increases the risk of problems 16-fold. You see? So what he's saying is the Pfizer is doubling it with each one of these. So that after you've had three shots, it's eight times the risk. But he's saying that with Moderna, the second one, not the, you know, you get three of them with a Pfizer, eight times risk. But with Moderna, two of them gives you 16 times the risk, according to the data from the UK. He said, because each Moderna shot contains 100 micrograms of mRNA, while each Pfizer shot contains 30. That's why. And it's one of the reasons why they are cutting down the dosage for the kids so much. Less than half of the dosage. And so for the boosters and for the child. So the boosters are lower and the children's dose is lower. And yet, even though the booster doses are lower, it's still doubling it because it's an accumulative effect. And when you saw those two boys, they were mistakenly given the full adult dose of the mRNA. They immediately had heart issues, young boys. So they know this. They want to do this. How was it that Fauci put it? We want to do it iteratively with successive boosters. If they kill you right away, then it's pretty obvious to us, to those of us who are looking at VAERS, but still, a lot of people don't get it. But there's not just the people who are dying immediately. Always in the past, Fauci and the pharmaceutical murderers have been able to avoid anybody catching on what they're doing because it typically takes so long for it to happen. The best documented case we had before this was the 2009 pandemics that was put together by Slowey and Fauci in 2009, and it took a year for them to see it showing up in children because it always shows up in the kids first. And the only reason that they're talking about this for people who are 40 years old is because they can't excuse it away as just old age, like they did with Franklin Graham. Franklin Graham, big cheerleader of the vaccine, and he winds up getting pericarditis and has to have an operation to remove the entire lining around his heart. A three-year-old girl dies of a heart attack one day after taking the COVID vaccine in Argentina. Made national news there. The government demands, said the mother, the government demands so much that they get the vaccine. And I know the vaccine killed my three-year-old daughter. She was fine. She didn't have any health issues, nor was she a sick child. She was healthy. She was full of life. This government that forces you to get the vaccine killed my three-year-old baby. That's right. One in 95 boys diagnosed with myocarditis in a California private school. This is from Steve Kirsch. And he said, even though they keep telling you that it's rare and potentially rare, he says, for a long time, I've been on the record as saying that the rate of myocarditis is around one in every 317 for teenage boys. That was a conservative estimate since it used the VAERS report, and they have an underreporting factor of 41, which is reserved for only the most serious events. So he says, since the CDC calls this mild, even though every cardiologist that I've asked says there is no such thing as mild myocarditis. I mean, how do they tell? One of the ways that they tell it is because it releases troponin, which is the same thing that's released when you've had a heart attack. And they can tell by the level of troponin that you've had a heart attack. And they can tell if you had another one, you know, when you look at it. Again, as I said before, I'd never heard of that before. I had my heart attack and then, you know, I went in, they wanted to do the procedure that day. I said, no, I don't want to do it. And so I stayed, they had me staying in the hospital, and then they came back in. They said, well, you had more heart attacks over the night and, you know, and so forth. And so anyway, but they knew that because of the protein that was released. In the same way they know that you've got micro blood clots because of the D-dimer test that can detect that even before you can see it. So, anyway, getting back to Steve Kirsch, he says, today I heard from a parent of a child who attends Monte Vista Christian School that three children were diagnosed with myocarditis after they got the vaccine. The school has 855 kids. In autumn, the parent learned that three students had myocarditis. So he says, let's do a little bit of math. The ratio of male to female rates of myocarditis is roughly 10 to 1. So it's a good bet that these were all boys. Roughly half of the school are boys. There's never been a vaccine mandate at the school. So I'd estimate conservatively that two-thirds of the kids could have been vaccinated by then. So if you take the total population, you cut it in half, and then you look at two-thirds, that means that there's 285 vaccinated boys. So if that were the case, it would be 1 in 95. So he's made some estimations there, right? He's estimated, the population of males. He's assumed that they're male. And these are all reasonable assumptions. But he said, if that were the case, 3 out of 285 would be 1 out of every 95 boys, and that would be a horrific thing. And then he followed that up, and he says, I now just learned there's a fourth case there at that school. Fourth case. It's just rare, right? It's rare. Yeah, one school where they have 4 cases, and they're not even requiring it of the entire population. The Florida Surgeon General has proposed that children skip the COVID tests. Well, that's a start. That's a start. As a matter of fact, that's one of the better things that DeSantis has done. This guy they have as a Surgeon General in Florida, he's a rational guy. He's backing off against a lot of this stuff. In a Monday news briefing, the Florida Surgeon General took aim at mass testing and said the Florida Department of Health will soon recommend that people forgo testing unless it is what he labels to be high value. It is this excessive, obsessive testing that is happening everywhere. So much so that people can't get the test and they're lining up to get the test. They have been driven to this by a fear campaign on media. And these tests, which are not that accurate, many of them giving false positives, are driving this OCD behavior even further. Are people finally realizing the damage that the COVID lords have caused? Well, LifeSite News talks to a philosopher, as he called himself, Paul Kingsnorth. He writes for Unheard, H-E-R-D, out of the UK. In an interview, he said that he has changed sides on the vaccine wars. And they are wars. I mean, you heard that guy, the medical ethicist at the beginning of the program, he used the term war 3 times in about the 1 minute that he was speaking. They're at war with us. Anyway, in essence, he explained to the host that he is pro-vaccination as a rule and was less trusting of the government narrative surrounding the jabs. He believed that spirited resistance against vaccination was unwise, and he fell into the trap of looking at those who wanted to refuse vaccination as being part of something like the far right. However, as a philosopher and somebody who thinks things through, he realized something was up when the notion of mandatory vaccinations became a talking point. Simply put, segregating people based on vaccination status was a step too far. That's why I said, you don't have to even know what's going on with these reports looking at the high rate of heart attacks, or you don't even have to look at the VAERS report. When you have a situation where people come to you, forget about the vaccine for a moment, and somebody comes to you and offers you a bribe to do something, don't you ever question their motives to do that? When they start offering you all kinds of stuff, it's like, why are you doing this? If this was any good, you would be telling me, I could see this for myself, and you'd just be selling it on the merits, right? But so why is it that you're trying to bribe me? And then it becomes even more suspicious when after they've used everybody that will take the bribe, when they start trying to blackmail people, when they go from bribery to blackmail, and then they are continually increasing the blackmail, how can people not see that there's something else going on here that doesn't have anything to do with medicine? And then you throw in the other aspect of this, the toxic aspect of this, and it is truly over the top. That's why I said I've been an anti-vaxxer since I learned that they had no product liability either. So they got no product liability. The government is bribing people to take this, then blackmailing people to take this. Thomas Massey said the laws protecting drug companies from masks and vaccine liability is a real problem. And that's another thing to think about. This PREP Act that was put in by George W. Bush protects people for all of these things. Right? Look at the case fatality rate for the ventilators that Trump was going insane, threatening people because they weren't making them fast enough. And yet you got 85 to 90% of the people put on these intubation ventilators die. They have, and there's been a recall. I had a listener send me the recall information on those things. But it doesn't matter what they do. They are just as protected with those ventilators. They are just as protected with damage that they do to people with the masks or with anything else, or if they harm you with a test that they send with swabs that leave prickle, you know, little things behind on meat when you scrub it on that. They don't use cotton swabs for some reason. They got their own special swabs for this stuff that come off. You know, all of this stuff, if it does any harm to anybody, it's all covered under the PREP Act of 2005 that was put together by George W. Bush. And kudos to Massey for talking about that. I didn't get to the headline news, and I wanted to say this at the very least. I had, as I was talking about the run-up to all this stuff and how you had the massive amounts of money that were being poured into the repo market. And that was a big red flag to a lot of us. And I said at the time, I said, I don't even know what the repo market is, but if you're going to dump $4 or $5 trillion into some marketplace there, and you're, you know, on one day you're dumping the entire equivalent of the gross domestic product of Switzerland, the 20th largest economy in the world, into this market, what is going on with that? And so I had a listener who, Robert, who sent this in, he explained it very well. So let me just read you the talking points that he put in here. He says the Fed purchases a huge amount of investment securities, treasuries and other debt instruments from banks, financial institutions, by crediting these institutions' reserve accounts at the Fed. In theory, the banks could use their higher reserve accounts to lend out money into the economy, and they could make profits for themselves. And as a matter of fact, you know, because of the fractional reserve system, that is a very profitable thing. Anyway, the banks don't wish to lend money into the economy because the interest rates were too low. So the capital tied up at the Fed in the form of reserve accounts doesn't have a high enough return. So the Fed comes to the rescue. The Fed sells their securities to the banks with an agreement to repurchase the securities at a future date. That's where the repo comes in. The banks then can earn the coupon rates on the securities that they bought from the Fed while they pay the Fed a lesser interest rate on the reserve funds that they used at the Fed to buy the securities. Oh, isn't that nice? So you put some stuff on reserve there and you use them to buy something that pays back at a higher interest rate. That's a sweetheart deal. Once again, the banksters make out at the expense of the U.S. taxpayer because the Fed does dividend some of their profits into the U.S. Treasury. Those profits now reduced because they traded a coupon rate on a security for a lesser interest rate on funds transferred in the repo trades. The public good the Fed would point to is that this creates capital formation from the banks and it keeps banking markets liquid. But the banksters could have just lent the money and done the same thing, except they wanted more money. And they got it. It's kind of like when we saw the bailout, you know. After we saw these banks, there's a few of them that were too big to fail. The smaller banks were shuttering by the hundreds every year. And yet they came back and they said, well, we didn't get a bailout. We paid back all that money that we were loaned. They paid it back with zero interest rates, as a matter of fact. How is that paying it back? It was just simply pushing their agenda through. And some hopeful news, the Beverly Hills City Council, as well as the Los Angeles County Sheriff, are now pushing back on one of these Soros district attorneys, this particular one in L.A. This is a guy that Soros put millions of dollars in to get this district attorney elected. And now, with all the chaos that is happening there, they're putting in a measure to recall him. And you have even a Democrat saying, we need to change the law. We're letting these people steal up to $950 worth per trip. Let's take it back to where it was, which is about $450. And as Hot Air points out, it's too late. They've already figured this out. They'll just make more trips if it's $450 instead of $900. That's the point. It was all about creating chaos and lawlessness. It's a full-on attack, folks, in many different ways. Thanks for listening. Don't forget, 1 p.m. tomorrow. The Common Man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project to make sure the commoners own nothing. And the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary. But each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. thedavidknightshow.com.